see the path that I have chosen now has led me to a wall. And with each passing day, I feel a little more like something dear was lost. It rises now before me, a dark and silent barrier between all I am and all that pass beyond is what I seek. I fear that I may be too weak, and those of you who've seen it through to glimpse the other side. The promised land is waiting, like a maiden that is soon to be a bride. The moment is a masterpiece. The way
good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 19, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449-389-POUND. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, our scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off last Monday. We're in the book of Mark. The Gospel of Mark, chapter 2, verses 13 through 22. And he, Jesus, went forth again by the seaside, and all the multitudes resorted unto him, and he taught them. And as he passed by, he saw Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting at the receipt of customs, and said unto him, Follow me. And he arose and followed him. And it came to pass that as Jesus sat at meat in his house, many publicans and sinners sat also together with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many, and they followed him. And when the scribes and the Pharisees saw him eat with the publicans and sinners, they said unto his disciples, How is it that he eateth and drinketh with the publicans and sinners? When Jesus heard it, he said unto them, They that are whole need no physician, but they that are sick. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners to repent. And the disciples of John and the Pharisees used fast, and they come and say unto him, Why do disciples of John and of the Pharisees fast, but thy disciples fast not? And Jesus said unto them, Can the children of the bridegroom fast while the bridegroom is with them? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken away from them, and then shall they fast in those days. No man also seweth a piece of new cloth on an old garment, else the new piece that filled it up taketh away from the old, and the rent is made worse. And no man putteth new wine into old bottles, else the new wine doeth burst the bottles, and the wine is spilled, and the bottles will be marred. But new wine must be put into new bottles. That was the Gospel of Mark, chapter 2, verses 13 through 22. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We were looking into the paper that we were to file this past week, and we did. It did finally get out. It took till Saturday to finally get everything together and actually mail it out. But it did all get together. We did mail it out. I perceive the paperwork said it should be delivered Monday, so today it should have been delivered tomorrow, worst-case scenario, I'm sure. So they should have it by now. I know Jan's been working with many people to get it out to various places. We're also still looking for some volunteers to assist us in that and other things, so anybody can assist us, maybe get onto one of our committees or help us with paperwork. We've got quite a few things going on, so whatever people can do, we'll put them to work somewhere to do something in the process of what we're doing. Anyway, this was an extraordinary action, last week we started reading through this paper. We realized it's going to take three parts. Last week we did part one. We'll be doing part two in a minute or two. If anybody would like to get a copy and follow along, you can find it right on our website on the front page, nationallibertyalliance.org. It's just a few lines down. You'll see it says, Decision and Order and Declaration to Restore the Law. You also can get all of the information as far as the memorandums we filed with it and indictments and so on. If you go to nationallibertyalliance.org, on the blue bar, highlight grand jury, and come down one click to action against the judiciary. So you click on action against the judiciary. You get to a page where we file, where we have all the papers we filed into this court, which was quite a few. We filed 22 memorandums with this. We filed numerous habeas corpus and family rescue, felony rescue indictments. I didn't actually make a count on them, but you can see a list of all the judges that we've indicted, quite a few of them. And then we also indicted quite a few chief judges, and Well, let me see. Well, some of these were on denial of due process and felony rescue. Going back to the habeas corpus, these were all federal judges that we indicted. On the other side of things, it was mostly local courts, possibly some county courts, probably a lot of town courts and various courts throughout the country, throughout the nation. So all of the papers that we have been filing over the years and been ignored, then we did decide an indictment quite some time ago, but we're just filing them now. We also have a lot of information. On the indictment that we filed for the murder of LaVoy Finnegan, it was a 24-page murder conspiracy indictment. And we did do one concealment and felony rescue indictment against Judge Lawrence Kahn, who tried to shut our case down. When people call the court to get information on this case, they have been saying that, the case has been closed. They have been taking our papers. They still keep filing our papers. We indicted the judge. We overturned his ruling. We reminded him that this was a natural law court, and we moved on. Today's paper, this week's paper that we filed, is the conclusion of a case. We've been in court for 2 years. We've been in court actually longer than that. The court of public opinion, I guess you would call it. We've been filing papers since 2015. But we opened our court case with a statutory number in order to file papers. It still was a court case. It was an action, but it was also and mostly a depository, a place to file all our papers. And so we did do that. We opened that case, I think it was December of 2017, if I got the date right. I think it was 2017. Could have been 2016. Just talking off the top of my head at the moment, but I'm not sure. In any event, we've been in court about 2 years. We've been filing papers. They haven't answered us. And now it was time for a decision, and that's what we did. We also made a declaration. And again, anybody who didn't hear what we read last week, they should go to the up to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and click on the Monday call. It says weekly call on the top left side, and you can get a copy of the MP3, last week's MP3, which, again, we read the first third of this paper. So tonight we're going to be reading the second third. I think it's around page 17. I'm flipping through right now just to see where about it is that we're going to be picking up. On page 17 you'll find a title that says The Systematic Destruction of America by Enemies Both Foreign and Domestic. So we'll be reading the second part tonight, and next week we'll be reading the third part. People now have the full document. This is the filed document. It's been filed. So people could be reading this during the week. I advise everybody that they should do this to become knowledgeable of this case, understand what this case really is, what it's all about, by what authority we continue by. And it doesn't matter really to us much whether they ignore us at this point. At some point, they're not going to be able to ignore us. Papers have gone out to the chief judges, to all the 94 federal district courts. So each federal district court has gotten a copy. The federal appellate courts also have a copy, or should be getting a copy. And of course, we filed it with the United States Supreme Court and both houses of Congress, which of course is what the focus of our action and the focus of all of our paperwork has really been. Again, we did file a complete copy, a complete set of everything. It was quite a few papers. Goodness, it must have been maybe 8 or 9 inches high stack of paper to get all of these papers filed. So we filed a complete copy with the United States Supreme Court. We filed a complete copy, of course, with the Federal District Court here where we're filing all the papers. We opened up another case for the conclusion, so we refiled everything back into that case. So we have papers filed on both sides, both the statutory case number we used as a depository, And of course, the action at war where we also filed for common law. So someone's coming through. It looks like looks like Jan maybe. Anyway, so we filed it. We filed it with the United States District Court in the Northern District of New York. We also filed a complete copy. I'm not sure whether I said this, but I think I might not have, with the President of the United States. So the President of the United States and also Attorney General Barr. We filed a complete copy, everything to him. And again, so it's out there. Now, if we're going to be doing some things also in some federal courts, other federal courts, such as potentially habeas corpuses and some other things maybe, I'm not sure. But they will already have been put on notice by having this paper. Again, they have been filing our papers. As far as we're concerned, the court is still open. We also warned them that if anybody should call that courthouse to tell them that it was closed, we informed them of the process we've been going through, the clerks particularly, because the clerks would be the ones that answer the phones and say, hey, that case is closed. So we've notified them that that's a crime, that they continue to conceal. If they continue to conceal this, anybody we catch concealing our case will find themselves on the list of indictments. This is where a lot of our leverage and power is. We're going to have a lot of cases that are going to be joining us. We're pretty busy working with Joinders. And so each one of those cases is going to eventually become into this process and, again, added on to our case. And it'll be a constant, you know, reminder to them and a constant thorn in their side concerning these papers. And we will be making decisions on these cases within our court of record that we have filed. And, again, the courts can go on ignoring us if that's what they please to do for now. The status quo is what they do. They maintain the status quo. But they didn't get the memo yet that the deep state is almost annihilated, not completely. There's still people in there. But they can't really act very much because they can't expose themselves to each other as they could before. The upper power structure of a lot of these agencies, that's been removed, particularly in the FBI. So that has been removed. And so now everything they do to protect other people is in secret. They can only go so far. But these judges, you know, I got to believe they're not really paying attention. I'm sure they're not listening to Q. They're not following a lot of the information we get. And anybody following the regular news, the fake news, and even to some degree Fox News, they may think that, you know, that things are still going okay and that they still have a chance of beating this and that their structure has not been, you know, dismantled. But again, they didn't get the memo yet, I'm sure. That day will come. I believe it's going to come very, very soon, as Q said. And I'm not sure whether President Trump said this also, but I do know that Q said this. August is going to be a hot month, and we're deep into August now. It does this, you know, the heat does seem to be rising, and I'm sure before the month is out, it's going to be red hot. So again, you know, it's all about pressure. It's all about truth. Every word, every phrase, every paragraph in our paperwork is absolute truth to begin with, but it is obvious that it is truth. It is self-evident, as the Declaration of Independence puts it. We hold these truths to be self-evident, and truth is truth. Truth is self-evident, and what we the people have put together, our founding fathers on our behalf, we being their posterity at that point in time, you know, they have filed, they have put this everything together, and it is apparent. It is clearly holds water and is true. History supports what we've been doing. Every action we've done nothing outside of anything that hasn't already been done in common law. What's unique about what we're doing is we're doing a number of things all at one time, and that hasn't been done before. But declarations have been before. We have, you know, the Declaration of Independence, of course. We've got the Magna Carta. But there's plenty of documents to support what we're doing. Okay, so we're going to read through this, picking up page 17, The Systematic Destruction of America by Enemies Both Foreign and Domestic. And then we will, if Trent's here, I don't see him in line yet, but when he gets in, he'll pick the mic up for a short while, and if not, we'll go right into Q&A after that point. So let us go forward. Action at Law, Demanding a Return to the Law, and Decision in Order, Part 2 of 3. The Systematic Destruction of America by Enemies Both Foreign and Domestic. Abrogation of Common Law. On August 21, 1878, 75 bar lawyers from 20 states and the District of Columbia met in Saratoga Springs, New York, to establish the American Bar Association. Since that first meeting, the American Bar Associations have infiltrated our government at every level and played a pivotal role in the abrogation of common law, also known as natural law, in the United States by conspiring with the judiciary and Congress for the construction of law, thereby seizing control of all government official narratives on law. If the people dare to correct or challenge bureaucratic lawlessness, they are met by swarms of bar lawyers and all too often swarms of law enforcement agents. They remove the original 13th Amendment ratified in 1819, see Memorandum of Memorandum Amendment 13, that prevented foreign-controlled bar members from holding an office of trust and replaced it with another in 1865. They abrogated our unalienable right by changing them into civil rights. See Memorandum, Natural versus Civil Rights, calling those privileges and immunities, placing people under civil law in 1868 through the 14th Amendment. They created a foreign state within a city, Washington, D.C., through the Organic Act of 1871, placing the United States under the control of foreigners via the Deep State. They enslaved the people under the Federal Reserve Act. They gave complete control of our dollar to foreign bankers. Today, the 1913 dollar is worth about 4 cents. They have subjected the people to debtor's prison by taxing their labor, thereby enslaving the people through the unratified, anti-constitutional, repugnant 16th Amendment. They removed the state's rights of suffrage in 1913 through the Senate, thereby enslaving the people through the unratified, anti-constitutional, repugnant 17th Amendment. In 1944, at the Bretton Woods Agreement Conference, the United States totally surrendered the people's sovereignty to the banking forces by forcing the nations of the world to accept the dictates of the centralizing banking system. The International Organization Immunities Act, enacted in 1945, relinquished every public office in the United States to the United Nations and established a special group of foreign or international organizations whose members could work in the U.S. and enjoy certain exemptions from U.S. taxes and search and seizure laws. In 1947, NSA and CIA became operational and marked the birth of a national police state surveillance grid. Today, the CIA is a private corporation which operates as a prostitute for global banking interests and does not represent the United States. In 1948, the creation of the United Nations on American soil marked the beginning of the end of political sovereignty in the United States. John Kerry, without the approval of the Senate, signed the United Nations Arms Treaty, which will attempt to eliminate the Second Amendment. And private property will be eliminated in America through the United Nations Agenda 21 program, which is spreading across America. In 1950, the 81st Congress investigated the Lawyers Guild, and determined that the association was founded and run by communists. See 81st Congress Report Number 3123. Since at least 1960, Americans have been conditioned to ignore the encroachment of tyranny through television and the subsequent propagandizing of this medium of communications. In 1962, prayer was outlawed in the classroom, which marked the beginning of moral decay in America. On September 11, 2001, the National Police State Surveillance Grid reached maturity. This event, created under the guise of national security, the Department of Homeland Security, TSA, and FEMA, which during a national emergency controls every resource, every asset, and even our freedom. It also created the Patriot Act, and now today virtually every communication that we engage in is monitored and recorded for future use against the people. They have flooded our courts with nearly 150 years of repugnant acts, statutes, and rules, and applied them upon the people. And Title 28, USC, Section 3002, states that the United States is a federal corporation and not a government, including the judiciary procedural section. The de jure states, in the form of republics, and the de jure United States were incorporated or set aside by the Bankruptcy Act of 1933. Of course, their unconstitutional acts of legislation are nothing short of repugnant to the Constitution and therefore have no teeth and can simply be nullified by the people, and it is nullified herein. See Memorandum Jury Nullification. An unconstitutional act is not law. It confers no right. It imposes no duties. It affords no protection. It creates no office. It is in legal contemplation as inoperative as though it had never been passed. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. The truth holds that if we, the people, vest the judiciary with the power to judge men subject to the legislation of men, how much more the king's bench to judge all men subject to God's law? All of the aforesaid destructive acts were possible because the federal government, after lulling the people to sleep via propaganda through mass media over many years, have seized control of our once biblical classical education and replaced it with their outcome-based socialist education, and thereby resulting in ignorance of the law, liberty, and the American history. Communism, Marxism, socialism, and democracy, which is mob rule, are destructive to government by consent of the people under natural law. In 1961, President John F. Kennedy warned the people when he said, "We are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. It conducts the Cold War, in short, with a wartime discipline no democracy would ever hope or wish to match. There is a very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning and to its very limits of official censorship and concealment. The government-supported ABA has systematically infiltrated our federal and state legislators and courts, and through an overwhelming army of non-thinking, highly trained in the art of legalese, Babylonia, codes, attorneys that serve the lie and not the truth. These lawless lawyers confuse the common people with their mumbo-jumbo and irrelevant arguments. They have flooded our courts with repugnant acts, statutes, and rules such as the aforesaid Organic Act, Federal Reserve, 16th Amendment, 17th Amendment, International Organization Immunities Act, Internal Revenue, Patriot Act, and Homeland Security Act, to name just a few seditious acts of Congress that have exercised in our courts daily against the Patriots, along with the elusive federal rules that, when harmonized, accomplishes the seizing of our Article III courts and the delivering of we the people to jurisdictions unknown. See Memorandum, Article III Courts. The government-supported ABA willfully advocates, abets, advises, and teaches repugnant statutes as law designed to enslave the people and overthrow federal and state governments. These tyrants have ignored and expunged the people's six directives. Instead of forming a more perfect union, they have given our federal cities, post offices, coining of money, and law writing to foreign bankers and bar attorneys. Instead of establishing justice, they have concealed our courts of natural law, turned our courts to jurisdictions unknown, abolished habeas corpus, changed our unalienable rights to civil rights via the repugnant null and void 14th Amendment by claiming that we are subject to the United States jurisdiction, when in fact we are subject only to natural law. They turned lawmaking over to the bar who have abrogated the law of the land. Instead of providing for the common defense, they have kept our armed forces in a state of perpetual war against the will of the states, sent our National Guard, also known as the militia, to foreign countries, leaving the states unprotected, abolished an unorganized militia, closed our armories, and imposed gun control. Instead of promoting the general welfare, they have regulated commerce instead of making commerce regular. They control the flow. They impose unconstitutional sin taxes. They have prevented and hidden advancements in science, health, technology, and inventors have been stifled and murdered. And instead of securing the blessings of liberty, they have changed our natural law constitutional republic first into a democracy, then into an oligarchy. The federal judiciary has seized powers not delegated to them. The assumption of sovereign power and the institution of government by consent are acts of supreme authority which the people alone are competent to perform. And accordingly, it is in the name and by the authority of the people that the judiciary was vested. Whereas the federal judiciary has seized power not delegated to them in violation of the 10th Amendment. Abortion, a case in point. See Memorandum, Abortion. The people are to decide through courts of justice, and not judges in courts of equity concerning the issue of abortion, which is under the jurisdiction of natural law and not equity. Roe v. Wade was unconstitutionally adjudicated by the United States Supreme Court, which is an equity court governed by codes, statutes, and regulations. See Memorandum, Statutes, Codes, and Regulations. And thereby, the judiciary seared the conscience of America, and today we restore America's morals. This then brings the issue into its proper jurisdiction, a natural law court of record, adjudicated by the King's Bench, the people, made up of 12 people who are to mirror the will of nature's God, answering to him alone. The United States Supreme Court does not have the authority to think like God's adversary, that they can change God's laws. Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, "And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear down the saints of the Most High, and think to change the times and the laws." Amendment 10, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor forbidden by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people." The United States Supreme Court and its federal judiciary is in bad behavior. They have unlawfully tread upon the Constitution, the rights of the people, and the states to govern themselves. And most alarming, they think that they can change the laws of God. Therefore, the United States Supreme Court and its inferior courts are to immediately cease their lawless jurisdictional advances designed to spread their socialist agenda or suffer the consequences of indictment for subversion, conspiracy, and treason. Over the past two decades, the United States Supreme Court remained silent when we, the people, exercised our unalienable right demanding a redress of grievances, which is protected by the First Amendment. The United States Supreme Court, having controlling power over the out-of-control inferior courts, turned a blind eye to the sins of the subversion by the federal judiciary when they have a duty to stop it. The United States Supreme Court has sanctioned the turning of our natural law courts into de facto fictional equity courts. The United States Supreme Court has sanctioned the writing of rules repugnant to liberty by the bar minions of the New World Order. The United States Supreme Court has sanctioned the concealment of our natural law courts, thereby causing the people to weary themselves to find the door. The United States Supreme Court has sanctioned equity rules in our courts of law that deny due process. The following is a short list of Bill of Rights violations and the seizing of jurisdictions never vested to the tyrannical federal judiciary, and interfering with numerous issues protected by the Tenth Amendment that clearly belong to the states and the people. They overturned the rights of the people to vote English as their official language. They overturned state legislation passing term limits for politicians. They overturned the people's right to vote to stop state funding taxpayers' services to illegal aliens. They overturned the people's right to deny special rights to homosexuals. They overturned the people's right to vote to defeat a tax increase. They overturned the people's right to vote to limit contributions to state candidates. They overturned state legislators that passed a woman's right to know the law concerning abortion. They overturned state legislation that passed the marriage amendment. They overturned the people's right to vote against physical assisted suicide. They overturned the people's right to vote to define a marriage between a man and a woman. They have denied Amendment 1, the right of the people to petition the government for redress of grievances. They have denied Amendment 2, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. They have denied Amendment 4, the right of the people to be secured in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizures. They have denied Amendment 5, the unalienable right to a natural law grand jury and not be put in double jeopardy and not to be a witness against themselves. They have denied Amendment 6, the unalienable right to an impartial jury and non-bar assistance of counsel. They have denied Amendment 7, the unalienable right of common law jury and a natural law jurisdiction. They have denied Amendment 10, the state and the people's rights of power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution. They legalized murder via abortion that natural law will not permit. They have interfered with the President's constitutional duties to protect our borders, and they have concealed the people's unalienable right of natural law courts. Destruction of sovereignty. By the following three repugnant amendments, the bar minions of the New World Order have been nibbling away at our Constitution since the beginning, destroying the balance of power, the law, state sovereignty, and the sovereignty of the people. The 14th Amendment attempts to change our unalienable rights granted by God into privileges granted by men. The 16th Amendment attempts to turn the people into indentured servants, subjecting them to debtors' prisons if they do not submit, and thereby turning the people into subjects of the federal government, no longer sovereign, but slaves. The 17th Amendment usurped the states' jurisdictions, whereas these United States have been deprived of equal suffrage in the Senate in violation of the Constitution, Article 5, thereby destroying the balance of power between the states and the Federation. This robbed the states and the people of their ability to exercise power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor forbidden by it to the states, that was reserved to the states respectively or to the people, protected by the Tenth Amendment, thereby stealing the state's sovereignty. We, the people, hereby nullify the 14th, 16th, and the 17th Amendments. Our servants are taking money, hereinafter bribes, from special interest groups, thereby selling their vote and their soul to the highest bidder via lobbying. Usually on legislation that more often than not, they don't even have the constitutional authority to pass in the first place, and placing the will of the corporate world above the will of the people. Acts of our servants are not to provide for special interest groups, are not to divide us, are not to establish statutory courts in jurisdictions unknown, are not to establish law that enslaves the human spirit, are not to keep us in a perpetual war, are not to demoralize us, are not to destroy our posterity, are not to put us in harm's way, are not to rob our children of a public education, and are not to lead us as lambs to the slaughter to the New World Order. George Washington, in his farewell address, speaking of these subverters, said, "They have obstructed the execution of the laws, using combinations and associations under whatever plausible character with the real design to direct, control, counteract, or awe the regular deliberation and action of the constitutional authorities are destructive of this fundamental principle and of fatal tendency. They serve to organize factions, to give it an artificial and extraordinary force, to put in place of the delegated will of the nation the will of the party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority of the community, and according to the alternate triumphs of differences of different parties, to make the public administration the mirror of the ill-concerted and incongruous projects of faction, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interests. However, combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends. They are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterward the very engines which have lifted them up to unjust dominion." Acts of betrayal, acts of fraud, acts of treason. The federal judiciary is a creature of the law with clipped authority. The unauthorized creation of a foreign state within our federal city by the 41st Congress, who acted without constitutional authority, was an act of fraud, conspiracy, and subversion against the United States of America. Only we, the people, can ordain and establish laws and governments. Only we, the people, are endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights. Governments are not. Consequently, in conjunction with Marbury v. Madison, all latter construction based upon the Organic Act of 1871 is as null and void as is the Act itself. The said Act attempted to supplant our Republican form of government that our servants were entrusted to guarantee. This criminally created a foreign venue, proceeding under fiction of law. Any court resting upon said act is a de facto court. Any judge acting under such fiction of law denies due process and is acting in excess of their judicial authority, in collusion under the color of law, thereby losing judicial immunity. Therefore, any judicial reliance upon said act is injudicious. We, the people, being the authors of the law of the land, do not have civil liberties that are determined by the whims of legislators providing us with the power of doing whatever the law or statute permits, but to the contrary, we have natural liberty, which is the power of acting as one thinks fit, without any restraint or control, unless by the law of nature. In other words, liberty from all human legislated law. From May 2015 through September 2016, the grand jury served the following documents and the defendants did not answer. The grand jury filed and served 26 habeas corpuses. The grand jury filed and served 56 show causes and informations concerning the illegally non-judicial foreclosures. On May 15, 2015, grand jury served a writ quo warranto upon the county sheriffs, federal special agents in charge, U.S. Marshals, Joint Chiefs of Staff, governors, federal district courts, state assemblies, state senates, U.S. House of Representatives, and the U.S. Senate. On May 20, 2015, the grand jury served mandamuses upon 3,133 county sheriffs. On May 23, 2015, the grand jury served mandamuses upon the state and federal judges. On May 27, 2015, the grand jury served mandamuses concerning martial law upon county sheriffs, federal special agents in charge, U.S. Marshals, Joint Chiefs of Staff, governors, federal district courts, state assemblymen, state senators, U.S. House of Representatives, and the U.S. Senate. On May 29, 2015, the grand jury served mandamuses concerning the Second Amendment upon the county sheriffs, special agents in charge, U.S. Marshals, Joint Chiefs of Staff, governors, federal district courts, state assembly, state senators, U.S. House of Representatives, and the U.S. Senate. On June 3, 2015, the grand jury served mandamuses concerning terrorism upon county sheriffs, federal special agents in charge, U.S. Marshals, Joint Chiefs of Staff, governors, federal district courts, state assemblymen, state senators, U.S. House of Representatives, and the U.S. Senate. On June 6, 2015, the grand jury served mandamuses concerning subversion upon county sheriffs, federal special agents in charge, U.S. Marshals, Joint Chiefs of Staff, governors, federal district courts, state assemblies, state senators, U.S. House of Representatives, and the U.S. Senate. On July 10, 2015, the grand jury served mandamus to all 50 governors. On July 20, 2015, the grand jury served mandamuses to the U.S. Supreme Court. On October 14, 2015, the grand jury served information to all state and federal judges. On November 15, 2015, the grand jury served information concerning abuse of SWAT upon county sheriffs, federal special agents in charge, U.S. Marshals, Joint Chiefs of Staff, governors, federal district courts, state assembly, state senators, U.S. House of Representatives, and the U.S. Senate. On November 15, 2015, the grand jury served an order to show cause upon the federal district courts, judges. On February 18, 2016, the grand jury served mandamuses upon all 50 governors. On February 22, 2016, the grand jury served informations upon the sheriff, federal special agents in charge, U.S. Marshals, Joint Chiefs of Staff, governors, federal district courts, state assemblies, state senators, and the U.S. House of Representatives in the U.S. and the U.S. Senate. On September 26, 2016, the grand jury served information concerning martial law upon the county sheriffs, federal special agents in charge, U.S. Marshals, Joint Chiefs of Staff, governors, federal district courts, state assemblymen, state senators, U.S. House of Representatives, and the U.S. Senate. On December 14, 2016, the grand jury, also known as the above said tribunal, on behalf of the people, opened an action in the United States Court for the Northern District of New York, case number 1-16-CV-1490, for the purpose of proceeding under the judicial auspices of the court, and copied the United States Attorney General Jeff Sessions for the assistance of United States attorneys in order to pursue further investigations of high crimes revealed and to prosecute indicted individuals identified in our investigations. In these filings, the grand jury reported that within our government, as JFK revealed, resides a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations that serve a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence on infiltration instead of invasion, on a subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. This system was constructed by the deep state, whose preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. It conducts the Cold War, in short, with a wartime discipline no democracy would ever hope or wish to match. On January 16, 2017, we the people served redress of grievances and reported said conspiracy upon our United States House of Representatives and Senate, the United States Supreme Court, President of the United States, and all 50 governors. With the exception of the President Donald J. Trump, who has taken action, we have been met with a deafening silence from the United States House of Representatives, the United States Senate, and the United States Supreme Court, and the federal judiciary, and all 50 governors. On December 14, 2016, we the people filed an action against the defendants in the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York, and that also served as a depository for grand jury documents so as to proceed under the judicial auspices of the court and mark the official beginning of this trial. And this filing is the end of that trial, being a writ demanding restoration of the law of the land via a decision and order by the Common Law Tribunal. This writ, decision, and order will be filed under both the statutory number 116 CV 1490 and a common law and non-statutory form bearing the number 1776, 1789, 1791, 2019 that we assigned. As the judiciary always does, they concealed our natural law courts, extorted a fee for the opening of a court of record, and then transported our court of justice to a de facto equity quasi-court of injustice operating under jurisdictions unknown. As bar-controlled courts always do, in order to maintain the status quo, the attorneys conspired with Judge Kahn to trespass on a common law case under a common law tribunal, to conceal, and to use Rule 12 to silence the people. In response, on July 7, 2017, the grand jury filed a 7-count true bill of indictment against Judge Kahn for concealment, felony rescue, trespass upon the case, denial of due process, acting under the color of law in the attempt to seize control of this court, manufacturing an unlawful order, and aiding and abetting. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. Servants whose character is thus marked by every act which may be defined as a tyrant are unfit to be the stewards of a free people. We have warned our elected and appointed servants from time to time of attempts by their unlawful legislative and judicial actions to extend intolerable jurisdictions over a free and independent people. We have reminded them of their oaths and their duty to the same. We have appealed to their sense of honor and justice, and we have reminded them of our covenant with our Creator via the Declaration of Independence. And we have appealed to their conscience to disavow these usurpations of our unalienable rights. But they have closed their ears to the voice of justice and have remained silent when having a duty to speak, which can only be equated as fraud. We, therefore, the sureties of the peace for the people of the United States via this tribunal, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the righteousness of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these states, solemnly publish and declare that these United States are, and of a right ought to be, free and independent states. Okay, that brings us to the end of this second part of this paper. The third part we will read next Monday, and it picks up on, it starts off on page 32. where we also left off halfway through, or partway through anyway, picking up on the decision and order by the authority vested in we the people by God. So we'll pick up there next Monday. Meanwhile, people are free to read this on their own, to go back and reread it, listen to the audio maybe last week if they didn't, maybe just read it themselves, and digest what we're putting together here and how we formulated this process. And again, we've been doing things exactly as already been done in the past. Nothing here is new. Everything is part of common law and the process. Okay, Jen, do we have any announcements or anything before we move forward? And is Brent here? Did anyone see Brent come in yet?
No, I didn't see Brent yet.
Yeah, I don't see him either. So after your announcements and stuff, we'll go into open forum unless he comes in. But go ahead. Do you have anything?
Yeah. I guess I should say first, we got all the addresses out for the 94 district courts, for the 50 governors, and for the 13 appellate courts. Yeah, I had a number. I have sent them out to the individuals. I don't know how many of them have actually mailed them yet. Okay, because it takes a certain turnaround time.
Right.
That's good news. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I would presume by next Monday they probably all should have this.
Possibly, yeah, I would think so. We had a number of questions, like people questions why there was no seal, and as you explained, that only the ones you mailed with a full copy of 400 pages got the seal on it. These don't need it.
They don't really need the seal, but I believe I went back up and put an ink seal on this one. I'm looking right now because I'm looking at the one that's online.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure I did, so anybody that hasn't printed it out yet and is going to print it out, if you download it, go back and download the latest. And I think I did that. I think you informed me on that on Saturday night. But it was over the weekend
right.
I did that. We do have one with a seal. But even without the seal, the word seal in itself, even without a seal, works as a seal. Of course, we do want a seal from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury under the common law, so we've got that. But go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, for those people that have already downloaded, if you haven't sent it, you can just print that one page with a seal on it and substitute it in your copy and bring it up to date. The secondary mailing, I've got part of the information for that. I'm waiting for the rest of it. I think there's 50 more copies that will be going out here shortly as soon as I get the mailing list finished up and sent to people. So I think we're doing really great here so far with the numbers we've got ready to go. There were a few other questions off the top of my head. I can't think of what it was. Some people were concerned because they said they found errors. I did change some of the copy on the file on the website, and they were concerned whether they had the old or new copy, and if they just downloaded it. At the time I sent out the notice, they would have the new copy automatically. The old one was discarded, so only the new copy remains on board.
What kind of error did they pick up? What kind of errors?
Like Mr. Maher's name wasn't spelled correctly, Attorney General. So we fixed that, and there were some bunch of punctuations and stuff.
Just to make a point here or note, no matter how much we check, we're still going to have an error. But we've read a lot of Supreme Court rulings, and we've read all kinds of stuff, and we find errors from time to time, all kinds of errors. We've got 22 in-depth memorandums attached to this paper. And we've got 150 or more other documents attached to this paper. We've got, I don't know how many indictments, and all kinds of other papers. And within it, we're going to have errors. I mean, we'll never get anything out if we're going to continue to go forward with errors. But we do appreciate the help. Next time we do something, last time we did this, we did ask for people, assistance in reading and looking and helping us with errors. And we've done the best we could. And even after this, I'm sure we're still going to find more errors. But all in all, I think it's clear. But go ahead.
Well, when you consider the length of the document, the number of errors that have turned up is pretty minor. You know, it's nothing is perfect, and we keep working at it, and it gets better each time through. But there, like you say, there will always be some errors. That's the only announcements that I have. Terry has the questions for tonight if you want to do the questions next.
Yeah, let's move over to the questions. Before I do that, just let people know we got a few people in the queue. If anybody wants to get into the queue to ask a question or make a comment, star 6 and then a 1, star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue. Terry, what kind of questions do you have?
Okay, can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Okay. I have a Steve, and he said, I would like to see another category of non-judicial income taken. They force you to be the victim to try and getting back your money when they find ways to dismiss your case and claiming immunity in Title 18 and 42, which is a legal notice on my properties with a fine of $5,000 per person per day for violating the U.S. Constitution. And he goes on with several other things. Not exactly a question, but I think he wants to know if you want to consider that other category.
And which category was that? I know you read it in the first part.
Non-judicial income taken.
Oh. Well, look, you know, in our wherefore clauses that we will be placing in paperwork as we move forward and work through all of these different cases that are being joined to us, not only are we going to make a ruling on the cases, we're also going to require that these people restore, the victim back to their original state before this all happened. So if people lost their homes, they need to get their homes back. If people, lost anything else, and even their liberty, okay, and that we'll have to think out on, people that have been in jail unrighteously for a period of time. We'll figure something out on that. But also, injury, not just restoring the person. People have been injured, and we'll try to work some kind of a formula out for different cases, and attach it to. We'll have to just work the formula out, but that is something that's in the future. It's a couple of months down the road. First order of business. Let me just define real quickly how we're going through this process. When people want to join a case to us, they have to fill out a joiner. They have to request. They have to petition us and request to join us. Once they do that, we receive their paperwork, and we accept them as joiners. First order of business, we send out to the court that they're stuck in an amicus curiae. And that amicus curiae really lays out the problems within the court, particularly the constitutional violations. People are not receiving true, due process because they're not courts of record. They're operating under jurisdictions unknown. And in that paper, we demand that they cease and desist the case and restore the individual to their original state. Now, if they reject and deny and don't do the right thing, or at least answer the papers, and then we can go from there. But if they reject the restoring the person and they deny the crimes that they've committed, that's when the case finally gets moved into our case. So once we get the petition and then we file the amicus curiae in that court, it takes about 30 to 35 days before we can move that case into our case and attach it. Now, if they do the right thing, then the people will be restored to their original state when this whole thing started. Any damages further than that, they would have to pursue. And, of course, we would suggest people waiting off to pursue in courts of justice and not courts of injustice. We have to repair the system first, but at least we can restore the people. And maybe we will assist people with that. The other thing is that if they don't do the right thing, which is the probable action, at least in the beginning, they don't do the right thing, then we move it into the federal court for cause, and then we deal with that problem. Not only do we require them to restore the individual back to their original state, but we also now require them, and again, we're going to create this formula, we require them to also pay for injuries. So that's kind of what we're doing with that process. And remember, so we're looking to get people's monies back. And people who have paid money to maybe do a countersuit or things of that nature, of course, that would be part of restoring them back to their original state. If people work with lawyers trying to deal with this problem and spend money on lawyers, again, they have to be restored back to their original state. Those monies need to be replaced back. And we're going to make it clear, we're not interested in the people paying for this. We're the people. We're not interested, they're going to try to pull the money from other sources. No, the people involved, the lawyers, the judges, they're the ones that have to restore the people. They're the ones that injured the people. They're the ones that have to repent and be brought back into society also through their restitutional process. And that is the common law. You know, common law is not just to restore the injured party, but also to restore the violator, hopefully bring them back into society and become a decent individual. But again, this is a little bit down the line. It's going to be a rough road for a little while. There's a lot of stress and pressure on the courts right now, particularly with what's going on in Washington. I know on the federal level, they understand a lot more than the state and the other levels. On the federal level, I think they're going to be a lot quicker to respond correctly than the other courts, the state courts, the county courts, and all the lower courts below that. So that's going to take a little time, but we have to have patience and we have to keep pushing. And every time we file another joinder is just another nail in their coffin, another hit upon the process. And we will keep filing and filing and filing and filing and filing. We also are going to do a lot more. Well, hopefully we'll do very little. I mean, if they respond very quickly, then we're going to be in good shape. But if they're going to take their time, we're going to continue to indict. Anybody who puts their foot into the doorway, so to speak, or tries to conceal a paper or tries to intervene in this court case in any way, shape, or form, anybody who's working for the government to do that, we've already agreed an indictment is the proper action upon them. And so we will be filing more. And I think once these judges realize, because these papers are going to all of the federal districts. And they're going to be read. They're going to be shared. They're going to have conferences about this paper before they try to figure out what they're going to do. But in any event, we did sue the United States Supreme Court, so they got to all kind of look to them to see how are we going to go. But their sins are on paper. We're laying it out very clearly. But they're also going to see some of these chief judges, federal judges, they're going to find their name. Because we've got quite a few of them on our list that have denied people habeas corpuses, and that is a serious, serious violation. And, that is due process in their face. They don't care. That's an attitude. But they'll see their names, and we should hope that that's going to put more pressure on them. And now when we send a habeas corpus into those federal districts, they're going to know that we're going to add them to that list. We may not notify them. But in a sense, they have already been notified because we listed out their names in this paper. And that would be under the first part of the paper where we have the index and the list of attachments and indictments and so on and so forth. So this is a pretty powerful paper, I think. It also is going to be, it's going to hit them hard, I think. It's going to shake a lot of them up. And we're also, you'll see, I don't think we hit that part, I don't recall reading it yet, but there's a part where we quote, now is the time for all good men to step up and do the right thing. We put it out to them that this is all the good judges out there, all the good people working in our court system that have been watching all of this criminal activities and destruction of people in the courts and are sick and tired of themselves. This is their time to step up and do something. But we are going to remove lots of people, and we have no problem. If we have to, we will have no problem but to indict, if necessary, even the United States Supreme Court justices. If that's what it's going to take, we have informed them of subversion, the highest levels, by enemies both foreign and domestic, and we've been informing them for years. And I think in the third part, we lay out that another piece of information, and we've been working at this actually since year 2000 through We the People, or 2001 it might have been. But we've been working at it. There's a lot of things that have been going on for 20 years, trying to get a redress of grievances, trying to ask them, do we still have a republic? Are we still a free people? because, my goodness, we've lost almost all of our rights. They've destroyed and shredded this Constitution. And they have no clue what it says. All the people in government, they have no education, no understanding of our Constitution, no respect for it. They take an oath and they lie at their oath because they swear to uphold and defend the Constitution. And when they don't understand the Constitution, they lied. They violated their oath. And they've done this every single day. They violate their oath. And we're willing to offer them the olive branch if they step up and start doing the right thing now. Of course, they've done a lot of damages, and, if people come and start laying upon them, charges, and then, of course, those will have to go through because people need to be restored. But they might be able to at least escape the charge of tyrant, the charge of subversion. They might be able to at least escape that. But it's up to them. Okay, next question.
Okay, this is from Sheila. She has two questions. The first one I think you've already answered, but I'm going to read it anyway in case you have anything different to say. And the second one I'll get to after you finish. We have already sent our notices of liability, notices of fault, and notices of default to our power company and our about to embark on the billing phase of the protocol in regard to the smart meter situation. We have never received any sufficient correspondence from the first three notices addressed to the respondents at the power company. Since we all know that this situation violates our Fourth Amendment rights and potentially subjects us to physical dangers and intrusion, is this something that should be joined to case you are filing?
Well, it is something we will deal with. We've got enough on our plate at this moment. Our first order of business is to secure a court of record and to open up courts of record in all 94 federal district courts, and then from there into every court of record court all the way down the line down to the county level. And the plan eventually would also start to shut down the lower courts that are not courts of record. And we're not going to get too deep into that. Maybe next week or another time we'll talk on that if people want to know more about that. But right now, just want to make that point that if it's not a court of record and they have no power and authority to judge the people, they have to inform the people when they come into that court. And if they don't, then they're going to have to suffer a certain charge against them themselves also. But as far as the electric company, there's more problems than this. We're all being overcharged extremely monies on our electric bills. That's everyone in the United States. There is a problem with that. A lot of energy, the selling of the electric services, they've kind of gone out, and even foreign powers have gotten into this and have seized sort of control of the process, and this has caused a lot of escalation of costs. At some point, we need to deal with that problem, but that point is not now. Next question.
Okay, her last question, unrelated. Also, I have to ask, where has Gerard been? Have I not heard him on the call for some time, nor yet heard his name mentioned?
Right. Well, Gerard's still going through some hard times. I had a little conversation with him today. He's trying to find time to read through all the paperwork, keep up with a lot of the new stuff we've got going. Hopefully he'll be back soon. His garage is still not worthy to go through winter. For those who don't know, he had a fire last year, and it was a real serious problem. And he owns a service garage, and he's been working literally in the cold last winter, and the wet, the snow, the wind. I mean, all that stuff just coming into his garage. It's walls open, doors gone. But he had to continue to work because he needed to make a living. Meanwhile, they, of course, did what they could. And through this summer, he's been rebuilding and restructuring. He's been getting a lot of help from local people, giving them different things. And now he just recently got some beams for his top structure so they can resupport his top part, the ceiling, the roofing, and working on the repairs up there. And anybody who would like to help Gerard out and maybe send a donation, you can send a donation to National Liberty Alliance, whatever you might want. just write a check or a money order. But do not put any money for Gerard in through the process through National Liberty Alliance's automated system, you know, where we use credit cards and so on. If you want to donate to Gerard's, to help Gerard, you know, again, mail a check or money order to National Liberty Alliance, okay? And the address is found on our donation page, but I'll just say it right here. It's 3979 Albany Post Road, Hyde Park, New York, 12538. Make the checks out to Gerard Aprea, A-P-R-E-A, and I will get it to him as they come in. And he certainly could use the help. He is in real serious, you know, situation. We did get some money, quite a few thousands of dollars last year to him, so it was pretty nice. And a lot of local people have been helping him out. But he's working he has to continue to work, and he's also trying to rebuild at the same time. And he's really working feverishly so he doesn't have to work under the conditions he had to work last year in the winter. Everything's closed in now, at least. But he needs a new heating system. That's all gone. All of his electronics are gone. You know, he did a lot of electronical work. That was one of his fortes. So that equipment was extremely expensive. But then there are good sides. There's a lot of good stuff you got, a lot of new tools. I mean, the fire was so bad and so hot. Remember, this was a garage. It literally melted steel in some places, you know. It was just, you know, serious with chemicals and different things. So, you know, some tools were totally destroyed, and some tools were able to be salvaged. But you know, it was a really bad situation. So hopefully before the fall is out, he'll be back up and active again. But right now he's got to worry about his family and so on. So again, if anyone can help, make your checks and money orders out to Gerard Aprea and send them to the National Liberty Alliance. Again, the address could be found on our donation page. Okay.
Okay. Vivian asks, is the lawsuit page still active for members to file on the lack of due process for the return of one's child through district court?
If anybody has any case that the government has brought upon them and they want to join it to us so that we can bring it into the federal court, you can definitely do it. You know, just send an email to intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. You can find that information also on our website, but it's intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. That'll go to James. James will respond. Make sure you put your phone number in there. And James will respond back to you with the instructions on how to go forward with that. And I gave the process just a little while ago, you know, that we go through certain steps. First, we do an amicus curiae, and we challenge the jurisdiction and try to move things to be settled through that first. The second, we'll be moving the case in. Of course, we have the joinder before that has to be made. And then the next, and then there's a series of things, and we eventually get the decisions and orders. But so there's a process that people can follow through. Get a hold of James, intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. Okay, next.
Okay, Jeff sent 5 messages and with several questions and several statements. So I'd like to just run through the questions if I could,
well, he's
one at a time. What would you like
tonight?
To do?
Well, let's see if Jeff is here tonight. I don't see him in the Skype. Jeff Gall, yeah, I don't see him. I'm looking for him. Maybe others can look to see if he's here. Because I did send him an email and told him I'd like to talk about this on live, and I do want him to hear. Jeff, if you're here, get into the queue now, and hopefully you're identified by something. I'm looking at phone numbers. He'd be a 518 number. I don't see any 518 numbers in the queue now. Jeff, if you're here, get into the queue. Let's hold that off for now. What else you got?
I have... Sally says, please ask Mr. Durash to comment on the letter from Chelsea Manning. She doesn't ask a question except that in what ways would National Liberty Alliance contributing to that change? And then she post a link to 3,000 words. So I'm going to hold that one off until we can talk to her more. I also have...
Do we know who Chelsea... Who? Chelsea Manning?
Chelsea Manning. She was the one that gave away all those secrets. And then in the middle of her trial, changed genders.
Oh, I heard something about
okay.
that. That was a while ago, I think. But, yeah, I don't
yes.
know what we can say on that, but go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. I have one announcement from Will, or Gary Will, on the Welcome Committee. He needs volunteers. He wants seasoned members or preferred, and someone who's looked through and done the foundational study and has knowledge of worksheets. That's one announcement. I also have...
Anybody who would like to assist with that, he's with the welcoming committee, you know, they can get a hold, send your information and to Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org and let them know that you're interested in helping us. And anybody interested in helping us on any level, it doesn't matter what experience you have or don't have, you know, we can use everyone's help. You can get a hold of Jan, let Jan know. If you have a certain expertise, let him know, and we'll try to fit you in that area. But get a hold of Jan, and if there's a committee that maybe we can start, and we do have certain committees already going, people want to get involved in an existing committee, or even create another committee that you know, works with what we're doing, of course. But go ahead, next.
And Robert would like to say a few words, if that's okay.
Sure.
Robert, we might need to unmute him. Let me go see if I can find him.
Okay, do you have any other questions or anybody else to make?
Nope, I think that's all my questions. Robert, I believe it's Robert O, but I wouldn't swear to that. And that's Jan telling me that Robert wanted to say something, a few words. Let's see if this is him. Robert, is that you?
Hello. Yep, that's me.
How you doing, Robert?
Okay.
Have you got me?
Yes.
All right. John, I'd like to mention to you, you're absolutely correct. These people have no idea about the Constitution or anything, especially my public servants in this town. It is deplorable. I was at the city council meeting tonight. A few of them know who I am and know that I do not care for the bar or any part of it. And therefore, they did not sit in council tonight. I found that very interesting. There also was two bar attorneys there. Kind of the upper end of the bar, cream of the bar crop. Anyhow, they left early. I did do a little presentment on our current article we're working with. And gave them a little bit of history about what happened, how it happened, how we lost our Constitution. Misplaced, I think I used the word. And also stated facts and gave them a rough, just a brief copy of, in other words, the first and last page of the 50, the cover sheet and all the rest. And my application for joinder and the other pertinent information. And they didn't know what to do. But as soon as council was over, they went into a private meeting. And all of a sudden, here appears a couple of bar attorneys and one thing and another. I am quite sure that that paper has been thoroughly thrashed around tonight already. And I made this statement to him. I said, I appeared here 10 months to a year ago and told you people that things have gone far enough in this country. This is the start of the action that you people have produced. It's about going back to the Constitution, the common law, the law of the land. And I said, I'm going to be 82 years old, and I'm going to run for sheriff again, because the one we got does not know what the hell is going on. And I turned around and walked off. So quite a bit of discussion afterwards. And yes, I did have a witness with me. It's one of our members. That's about all I wanted to mention, except for keep it up. We're getting to them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Robert. And you know, this is the most serious problem. The problem is uneducation. We've been we've been programmed. We haven't been educated, and you know, our educational system is centrally controlled by the federal government. They decide what curriculum could be used and taught within our schools. And any school that is getting any money from the government is required to take a choice of certain curriculums that they decide that is good. We have an outcome-based education system in our country, and the outcome is socialism. That is the whole thing. In the past 3 years particularly, I've been in some schools, lower school, the elementary school, and then also into a high school, and witnessed some things that just totally appall me. I just can't believe what I see. And when we see a lot of these young people running in the streets and acting the way they act, this is how socialists act. This is how Nazis act. And yet they call us that. We see that there's still quite a few people that have stayed with the Democratic Party, and I'm sure will be voting with the Democratic Party. And it's a lot more than I thought would be. But I should have known better, because they've been training our children up how to be socialists. And they are socialists. They really think that socialism is the way to go. They have no clue or understanding of history. You know, a lot of us that are over 60, we remember what took place, what communism is, what socialism is, what Nazism is. We know. We know what that is. And it's nothing good. But they have no clue. They have been deceived. But you know whose fault it really is? I got to speak to myself first. My ignorance has permitted this. Your ignorance has permitted this. If we're going to expect them to get educated, if we're going to expect our servants to become educated, we have to become educated. And, of course, that is one of the goals of National Liberty Alliance. We provide a proper, as Thomas Jefferson put it, a proper education. I'm very concerned that some groups may move along with these watered-down education, watered-down the teachings of the Constitution. Again, you know, most of these places, they teach things about the Constitution, but they never teach the Constitution. Let's get to the nuts and bolts. Let's get to the beef, the meat and potatoes of the whole thing. And that's what we do here at National Liberty Alliance. You know, looking at the beef, the potatoes. The meat and potatoes. So we have to make sure that we get our children a proper education. You know, we're writing a book for the people, which will be a proper education. We have a course on our website, of course. It's, the consent of government, okay? And also, after we finish the book, which hopefully will be done and ready to go into print in the fall or by the fall, hopefully, fall's coming up pretty quick, so, you know, September and October, November. But in any event, after that, we're also going to make a textbook, because we're not only dealing with taking back the power and the authority back in our courts, we want it in our political realms, too. And maybe by September, we're going to start talking some more about the political structure and the political, how we can take back the political process. And we can do it. It's called the committee man process, the elected committee man, because right now it's a top-down structure. That has been taken over by the powers that be, as well as our court systems have been taken over, and our Congress has been taken over, and our Supreme Court has been taken over, and the judiciary has been taken over, and until Trump, our administration has been taken over. And our states have been taken over. The governors, come to New York if you want to see a socialist system. Come see us in New York. We'll take you right up to Albany and show you all these socialists up there. And I'm sure a lot of people in their own states have the same problem. But only the people can save America. That is the point. That is the key. Only the people can do this. So if you're not willing to educate yourself, then your liberty, you don't care about your liberty. You don't care about your heritage. You don't care about your posterity, and you don't care about your neighbors. We have to care, and you cannot expect to know if these people are know the Constitution and act underneath the Constitution. You can't possibly know unless you know the Constitution. And that's where it starts. We need to get into our schools and get our children a proper education so that they can understand. Right. You know, we also, you know, we have this thing with the traffic, you know, the traffic courts. We need to shut them down. But you know what? We do need to educate ourselves and our children on how to drive. I mean, of course, many of us already know how to drive. We went through the process, all that other stuff. There's nothing wrong with giving a driver's test. You can't require it necessarily. But you know what? When I went to school, they had what was called driver's ed. And I took driver's ed. And I was able to get my license at a young age in New York City through driver's ed. And that was something you would sign up for, and you could go into any high school and sign up as long as you were between a certain age. They still offer that, I believe, in some high schools, but this should be a regular thing. Every child should be taught how to drive. Every child, whether they use it or not, that's up to them. Every child should be taught the Constitution and civics. Every child should be taught certain things, okay? And it's up to the people to make that happen. It's up to us to make it happen. It's up to us to get the grassroots excited to make it happen. And within the communities of the people, okay, in each one of the counties, as they gather together, you know, under the committee men for the political process and through the administrations of the courts, through the juries and things in working together between those two groups of people, you know, it's up to those people to be involved in their community to make sure what they believe and think should be taught in their schools are taught and the proper curriculum that they want in their local schools. But there are certain things everyone should be taught. And again, you know, reading, writing, and mathematics, of course, it's a necessity. Those are the building blocks of education. But also, you know, the fact that what is a committee man? Well, how does the political process work? They need to know the civics. They need to know the Constitution. They need to have courses. And when they get out of eighth grade, and that's another thing. We don't need any more than 8 years. You go back and look at the test of eighth grade back in the 1800s, and most people say, in fact, I haven't heard anyone say that they could pass that test. It's a pretty difficult test. And we do have that up online. I forget where it's at, but it could be found. We do have it up there. The education back in the 1800s was much, much greater. Maybe not everywhere, but in most places. You know, and back then and before then, they used the Bible basically to teach the children to read and write. And they offered a classical education, okay, which is really looking at the great men of history, ultimately, you know, the great works, the conversations of the ages. And the Bible is included in that, conversations of the ages. And this is where we got to get back to teach and train our children how they should walk. And when they get older, they will not depart from it. That's a promise from God, by the way. I believe that. And I see that in my life. But that's up to the people to do this, to train their children how they should walk. We need to train our children how to think, not what to think. We don't want outcome-based education. That's socialism. We want a good, solid, classical education. We want to build a community of thinkers, and that's the key. So woe unto us if we don't train ourselves and teach ourselves. Woe unto us if we don't understand and know our heritage and how powerful the Constitution is, which is our heritage. Unalienable rights is our heritage. To be able to control our government is our heritage. To live in a republic, not a democracy, a republic. We are not a democracy. We may use democratic processes to elect certain people, but we certainly don't necessarily elect our president straight as a democracy, and we never can. And a lot of people don't understand, well, why? It makes more sense to go the other direction. Well, because you're not educated in the Constitution. You don't understand the argument and the debate over how we decided to elect our president. You know, a lot of thought went into this, and a great good reasons. And if you understood the reasons, then you say, okay, yes, we can't have a president through a democratic process across the United States. It just cannot be. It's not possible. Same thing with our senators. Our senators were never meant to be elected democratically. They were to be brought in by the states. The legislators, I presume the process was with the government, the governor would bring someone up to become a U.S. Senate to represent them, and the legislators would vote and decide and approve it. And just like, our president brings in judges in different positions, and the Senate and the Congress, they have to approve that. Nothing different here. And again, we're not a democracy. People need to understand that. And the questions that we don't understand, we need to find those answers. And if we fail to do that, we're going to fail to continue to have any liberty, and our heritage will be lost forever. Okay.
John?
We have anything else? Yeah.
John?
Yes.
If I may, one side point. I got a call before about an hour before council meeting tonight, and I was invited to meet with Jan, our Jan, and his two brothers. Very interesting person. May I say kudos to Jan for all he does for NLA. Thank you.
Well, amen. Jan is a very important individual to this organization, and without him, we wouldn't be doing as well as we're doing. Trust me. Gerard, and they're not the only ones. I mean, there are others. All the people working. We've got a lot of people that are behind the scenes that are doing great jobs, and every job is important, and every job, makes a goal that makes this whole process work. So. Okay, anything else?
No, that's all I have, John. John.
Okay, we're going to move forward. We're going to turn to Brent for a short while, and then we're going to go into an open forum. We have some people in the queue, so anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. We've got Brent Winters with us. He is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, a great book. If you haven't read it, you definitely should read it. I would say do some studying in some of the works we're doing first, and then dig into this book, because it really is a great book, and you'll have a framework to stick a lot of this information to. But anyway, Brent Winters is with us, and he's going to talk to us about the Constitution, and his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent?
Thank you. I'm here, and I want to say at the beginning, as I usually try to do, that my comments are my own, and not necessarily the point of view of the leaders at National Liberty Alliance, and I'll take credit and responsibility for what I say. And also to make a mention, it was said a while ago that the Constitution of the United States is often known about, but it's not known. Well, that'd be like knowing about your wife or your husband, but not really knowing them. There's a difference between knowing somebody and knowing about them and really knowing them. And I know about a lot of people, but there's very few people I really know. And it's important among all things in life that we have to know. Chief of all importance is law. Not just any law, but true law. What makes the Constitution worth knowing? The Constitution of the United States. We call it the Constitution. There's not another one like it in the world. There are other writings that are similar to it, as we say here. But nothing like that. But is it inerrant? No, it's not inerrant. Is it inspired, as the Mormons say? No, the Mormons put it on the same level with the Bible. That's utter silliness. It's not. But it is an accurate agreement, substantially accurate agreement, over what due process really is. It's about due process. It stresses how things are to be done, not what is to be done. It doesn't tell you who has to be a senator. It tells you what the parameters are and how a senator has to get there and how a case, for example, has to get to court. It stresses how. The course of the common law, we call it. Our common law is a course. It is not a substantive law. It is due process. It doesn't just include due process. No, it is due process. And we believe at common law, if we concentrate on the course, the result will take care of itself. Let the chips fall where they may. That's not the way it is in the rest of the world. Only the English-speaking world is our common law countries, with a few other places where the English-speaking people have gone and had great influence, such as India. India is partially a common law country, not entirely. Partially. South Africa operates under common law principles. It doesn't have the Roman Code like the rest of the world, but it cites to the Roman Code for authority, amazingly. So it's kind of a mixture between the two. Of course, that's an English-speaking place now, but it was settled by the Dutch originally, and they were under the law of the city, the civil code of Justinian. And so our common law stresses how. I listen to you fellas talk, and boy, my mind starts dancing with things that your comments bring to mind. And a man called in a minute ago, Robert called in, and he said he's running for sheriff, and he said that these people in sheriff's office don't know Sikkim from set still. He didn't say it that way, but that's what he meant, I think. And it brought to mind what our problem is with sheriffs. And I want to mention my experience with sheriffs. I haven't run for Congress a couple of times. Unfortunately, some people have said I didn't win. It was disappointing. I ran in 27 counties. It was a large district. Of course, every one of those counties had a sheriff. And I got to know the sheriffs. I got pretty familiar over the few years. I was as deeply, I gave everything I had. I gave up every dime I had, mortgaged every piece of property I could think of mortgaging. I put everything I had into the race, and so I immersed myself entirely in the political process. And I got to know the sheriffs I wanted to know. And they liked me, most of them, unless they were left-wing wackos, some of them were. But I got to know all of them to varying degrees, and I discovered that all of them were making millions of dollars, all of them. Yeah, for the county, not for themselves. Making million? No, that's not how. They wasn't making million. There's a difference between making money and getting money. They weren't making money. They were getting money. Millions, even the smallest, and it was a rural district, as you can imagine, 27 counties. It was a rural district, and counties were small, but there wasn't a county in that district that didn't make at least about $1 million a year from the federal government, received $1 million a year from the federal government to house federal prisoners. One little county, Cumberland County, even built, little tiny county, built a brand new jailhouse, big nice one, right on the town square, right on the square where the courthouse was in the middle. Because they were making so much blasted money housing federal prisoners. Sounds great, doesn't it? Well, they thought it was great, but it's not great. It's not great because that is how, and it's conclusive. That's how the federal government controls sheriffs. Oh, if you don't do what we want, we're not going to send any more federal prisoners. Of course, the sheriffs can take those federal prisoners, put them in their county jail, and the government will give them, I don't know, what is it, $80 a day per prisoner or something. They spend $25 a day on the prisoner, feed him sparsely, feed him a fancy donut for breakfast. It doesn't cost much. And then a ham sandwich for lunch, and then some kind of a TV dinner at night, buy them in bulk, and you pocket most of the money for the county, or slip some to yourself. I don't want to eliminate that. That does happen. But the county is now dependent. Counties all more than 3,000 counties are dependent upon this money. They've been doing it for so long. Now, listen, if you go to federal prison, the first thing, I've known hundreds of federal prisoners, the first thing that the other prisoners ask you when you come in did you come off the street or from county? That's what they say. Did you come from off the street or from county? If you came off from off the street, straight into the federal prison, in other words, you just came straight to federal prison, then you hadn't had it too rough. But if you'd been to county, they knew you'd been through some rough times, especially in the bigger cities. It's utterly brutal. You're underfed, you're malnourished, you're abused. It's a rough place to be, and that's where the feds house prisoners before they go to trial often. I've known of prisoners that have been housed in county jails awaiting trial up to 2 years. So much for the Speedy Trial Act, huh? Yeah, that's right. And just learn to survive in a place like that. And as I said, it's bad enough in the small towns, but it's much worse in the big cities. Federal prisons are often a relief from getting out of county, especially, and most of them are, of course, the big cities have more people than all the, just a few big cities. The counties where the cities are have more people living in those counties than all the rest of the United States, all the other counties, 20%. Well, I don't want to go into that. I want to get to the United States Constitution real quick and make some progress here. We're going through it clause by clause and blow by blow. This information that I've been going through is in a book about the Constitution. It's the only book I've seen that does what this book does. First, it outlines the Constitution. It's organized the Constitution and the Declaration of 76. It outlines it, which I haven't seen done. And the outline of the Declaration of 76 is to the eye teeth. It's a beautiful document, and the outline of the document helps understand its provisions. And, of course, then also this booklet outlines the U.S. Constitution. And then it, clause by clause and blow by blow, gives comments, gets straight to the point about each one of them. It's a booklet that'll fit in your shirt pocket, but it's 200 pages long, but it's no wider than your shirt pocket. And how do I know? Because it's when I printed it, I measured shirt pockets in my closet to see if it would fit. I found out that shirt pockets are about two or three sizes, but they're pretty consistent. I didn't know that, but it will fit in your shirt pocket, but it's about 200 pages. It covers every clause, and that's what I've been going through. And if you want a copy of that, you can go to Amazon.com and type in my name, Brent Allen Winters, Brent Allen Winters, and you'll find there this booklet, the book that John mentioned, the 958 pages, a comparative law text, the law of the land versus the law of the city, the common law versus the civil and canon laws of Rome. They're absolutely contrary, the evil empire versus the kingdom of God, the first principles of it. Our Constitution is not the Bible. It's not inspired of God or expired, as the Bible puts it. But it is a solid document, very solid. And it stood the test of time. It is a brief of common law government, The Supreme Court of the United States has said that. That's what got me interested in trying to break it down, because you can't understand it, said Supreme Court Justice Taft, without knowing the common law. It doesn't explain anything. It just lays it out there. It talks about, says trial by jury, and talks about what a dollar, but it doesn't tell you what it is. It doesn't tell you what trial by jury is and all the due process that goes with it, because the common law fills all that in. Separation of powers, that's the principle of common law government. The jury, of course, is unique to the common law. It's not used anywhere else in the world. The grand jury, that's a creature of our common law, not used anywhere else in the world. So it is an observation of the way things were and the way things are. And it was agreed upon by the states of the United States. Section 10, Clause 1 of our United States Constitution. This is Article 1. We've been moving through it. Section 10, Clause 1 says no state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, confederation, grant letters of mark and reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. And there's a good one. Now it says, listen to this. Check this out. Consider this. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. And it says, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. We had pointed out that the federal government, according to the previous clause, has the power to grant titles of nobility. It does. That's seldom said. It has the power to allow someone to accept a grant of a title of power of nobility. I don't know that it's ever done that, but it says nobody may accept a title of nobility from a foreign prince or state without consent. I'm reading, without the consent of Congress. So that means it's possible. But here, the states may not grant any title of nobility. That's different. See, this one up here doesn't talk about the federal government granting a title of nobility. It talks about the federal government allowing a person to accept a title of nobility from a foreign prince or state. And Congress can allow it if they want. But here, states are forbidden from doing it. And I'd said before, for example, the state of Kentucky has picked up on the idea of the early veterans organization, Veterans of the War, but for the separation of Britain, popularly called the Revolutionary War. Veterans of that war migrated to Kentucky, and they formed a veterans organization called, and they called themselves, the Kentucky Colonels. And that's changed over the years. Those fellows are all gone now. But the state of Kentucky, many years ago, decided they wanted to grant that title to people. Grant a title of nobility. Or not of nobility, just a title. It's not an hereditary title, though. Titles of nobility, you can tell if they're titles of nobility if they're hereditary. Lawyers in the United States, for instance, do not have titles of nobility because anything they call themselves by, Mr., even Esquire, it's not hereditary. And if it's not hereditary, it's not a title of nobility. You see, nobility, the reason it's called a title of nobility in our common law country, formerly in England, was because those titles that were given to people were hereditary. And that means that they were titles given to your blood. And when you got one, it was a statement, a recognition of the nobleness of your blood. Blood, noble, nobility. What does noble mean? It means unattenuated. It means pure. Is that possible? Is it possible that a man's blood is not tainted and he's really a nice guy? He's really not depraved, as the Bible says? No, that's not possible. That's silliness. That's ludicrous. It's stupid. But they said, yeah, it's true, and you can inherit. I had my grandfather ran for justice of the peace. We used to have justices of the peace, and you didn't have to be a lawyer to run for justice of the peace. Some states still have them. Texas has them. Nevada has justices of the peace, and anybody can run for them. And my granddad, he decided to run, and there was a fellow there in the county named a judge. We called him Judge Williams. He lived in a really nice big house near the high school, and he had a lot of money, and he was pretty uppity. He was a lawyer, and so he was a judge a long time ago, so everybody called him Judge Williams. He had a attitude problem, had his nose in the air. My granddad ran, but he ran on the ticket opposite of Judge Williams, and my granddad was a Democrat. They were from Kentucky. In those days, if you're from Kentucky, you were a Democrat. And his family was from Kentucky, my mother's family, and they migrated there across the river. And Judge Williams was making fun of my granddad, and he said, what is it? And his brother. His brother was an auctioneer, my uncle, Uncle John Will Henry Hudson. And he said, he said to my granddad, I saw your brother's sale bill. He was an auctioneer. And it said at the top, Colonel John Will Henry Hudson, Colonel. He said, what's that supposed to mean? Well, of course, auctioneers around there are called Colonel. They have an honorary title. There's an historic reason for that. Colonel so-and-so auctioneer. And he said, what's that supposed to mean about your brother? And my granddad said, well, it's kind of like judge or your honor when people call you that. It doesn't mean much anything at all. And the fact of it is that titles don't make people honorable. And titles of nobility do not make people noble. There supposedly are recognitions of nobility. And when you say your honor to the judge, that doesn't make him honorable. A matter of fact, it's just something we do to go out of our way to not be disrespectful, because if we were disrespectful, if we didn't make an extra effort to be respectful, the system would tend to break down, and we can't afford that. That's why the Bible says, do not speak evil of the ruler of thy people. The ruler, that means the judge, the magistrate. Don't do that. Because even though he may be a jerk, he probably is a jerk, respect for the order of our courts and the ability for us to not have utter chaos and anarchy requires that we go out of our way to respect not so much the man, but the position he holds. For example, I mentioned this before, that's why the Bible says, honor thy father and thy mother. Your father or your mother or my father, anybody's father. There are people out there that have fathers and mothers that are not honorable. But that doesn't give you the option. You honor them anyway. Because if you don't, the whole country falls apart, as we now see happening. Dishonor of parents is the foundation of all government. It breaks down the foundation. Honoring parents is the foundation of all government, period, among mankind. Without that, you're wasting your time trying to make government worthwhile and decent and honorable. Well, I want to mention this about this particular clause. There's so much here, but I want to start out with the general government. The general government is the government in Washington, D.C. Of course, they have something to do with the coining of money. A state can require, says this clause, that the debtor's offering, that is tendering, holding out of the right amount of gold and silver coin, satisfies a debt even if the other fellow doesn't take it. That's what we call legal tender. Legal tender, if something's legal tender, that means the other fellow who you owe the debt to doesn't have to take the money, whatever it is, or whatever you're offering him. He doesn't have to take it in satisfaction of the debt. But if it's legal tender, according to the law, and you hold it out to him and he doesn't take it, the debt's satisfied. In other words, he can't sue you because you offered it to him. He wanted greenbacks and not gold, and we mentioned this last time. So that's what that is. It follows, therefore, that if the general government, that's the government in Washington, D.C., whether by statute or protected banking monopoly, that's what we have now, requires the people to accept paper banknotes in payment of debts, which they do now, it forces the states, according to this clause, to violate under unconstitutional force this clause of our Constitution. Because only gold and silver coin can be required as legal tender. And this is fundamental to the breakdown of our country because it puts the power of money issuance in a private bank called the Federal Reserve Bank. I don't remember what I said last time, but Bernie Sanders is now saying at the behest of the evil empire, they're finally coming out. And they're changing their tune, and they're trying to start a new paradigm shift. And Bernie Sanders is doing it. And he's saying, we don't owe this money to anybody. There's never going to be a shortage of Social Security money. We could never run out of Social Security money. It's utterly impossible for the federal government to ever run out of money. Any money that's allocated, they can fulfill their obligations because they can print money. They don't have to get money from the taxpayer. It is true that the money that's spent, the federal government spends on so-called services of people in the United States, none of it comes from tax dollars. Every bit of the tax money that's taken in goes to service the interest on the national debt. Where does the money come from then? Well, it's printed. And that's why we have the income tax. Bernie Sanders is saying this now. And he's got an economist that's promoting the idea with him. Are they right? Yeah, they're right. They've always been right. We don't owe anybody anything. And there's no way we're going to run out of money as long as the federal government can keep printing it. But they don't tell you that that might stop. But Bernie Sanders is now saying that'll never stop. So we can just pay for everything. If you want a new mortgage, if you want your fuel bill paid, if you want your education bill paid, let's get real, says Bernie Sanders. We can do all that, and his economist is out promoting that idea. And it is true. It is true, except what they don't tell you is that the whole thing has to blow up sooner or later. That's what they don't tell you. But it is true that Congress, and they're saying this too, Congress no longer has the power of the purse. Our Constitution is written so that Congress has the power of the purse. In other words, Congress can withhold money from the president so he can't fight a war. That's power. But that doesn't matter anymore. If the government wants money, they don't ask Congress for it. They just print more. That's how far we've gotten. That's why we're out of control. A couple of things I've mentioned here, I don't want you to forget. I'm going to repeat them. One of them is all the sheriffs in the United States are controlled by federal money because they're housing prisoners. I heard, even heard Sheriff Mack. He was on the radio one time. I called him Mack. You know, Sheriff Mack, the one that's been running around the country the last few years promoting the idea of constitutional sheriff. He's saying right things. But I asked him on the radio. He was being interviewed. I said, Sheriff Mack, how can the sheriffs of the United States ever do what they're supposed to do when they're utterly drunk on federal money? And they want more, and the feds have promised it to them. And also, it's abundantly clear that if they don't do the bidding of these perverts in Washington, D.C., that are holding the levers of power, they're never going to get, they're not going to get all that money, that, and they'll be ruined and voted out of office. And here's what Sheriff Mack said to me, for what it's worth. I just passed along to you. He was in a little tiny county in New Mexico when he was sheriff. And he said, he told the deputies and everybody when he was running, he said, we're not going to take money for nothing, just as a gift, because that's control. But he said, if we take money from the federal government, we're going to give a service for it. Well, what was he saying? He was saying, we're going to take federal prisoners because we're providing a service. But does that keep the federal government from controlling you? No, it doesn't. And as I'd said before, I asked him on the air, little tiny county, that was a long time ago. I said, how much money did the county get where you were there in New Mexico every year to house federal prisoners? And it was, he said, $900,000. That's what he said. And that was a very, very small county. And that was years ago. What's it like now? I know some of the normal-sized county, well, normal for my part of the world, had a town in them of, had a town of 16,000 people. That was pretty big around there, but he was getting $4 million a year. I don't know. I never saw the spreadsheet, but he told me. I asked him. He did four terms, $4 million a year. That's control, although it's not technically control. It's control. It's just like the control they get when they give you money for roads. You don't do what we tell you to do. Your roads are going to fall apart, and we're not going to give you any money. If you don't follow the programs that we tell you to follow, we're not giving you any money for your schools. Does the federal government have authority under the Constitution to even give money to schools in the state of whatever, Indiana, Wisconsin, New York? No, they don't. The power of the authority is not there. But yet, they hold that over their heads. And when they accept that money, they're under the entire control of the federal government. This is what's killing us. It's the power. This is why Ron Paul boiled it all down. He said, "Here's the this is the controlling problem." And he said, "In the Fed, because the power to issue money enables the Federal Reserve Bank to control everything in the country, every state, even the federal country government, federal country. That's what it is now. You know, they say that the Federal Reserve Bank is neither federal nor does it have any reserves. That's really not true." It is true that it doesn't have any reserves, but it is federal. It controls the federal government entirely, and through that control, it controls the states, because the states don't produce money. They have to get their money, or they think they have to get their money from the Federal Reserve. Now, some states are getting the idea that they can develop their own money system, and they ought to. When the Federal Reserve breaks down, they'll have support. Texas has dabbled in that through legislation. I think Utah has, and others are trying to, trying to get the people that are pushing the idea, are trying to get other states to catch on. But the states are dependent, you see, because they're dependent for money. They aren't printing money. They can't print money. They've never, the law won't allow them. They won't allow anybody. They'll jail you even if you coin coins, like that one fellow there in, I believe it was Southern Indiana, went to federal prison for coining a coin, a gold coin. Very popular in Arkansas and Louisiana, I think it was. Well, that's all I've got to say tonight, John. I yield back to you, and thank you very much. Oh, by the way, John, one other thing. We're doing a a contracts class on Saturday morning. Saturday mornings, you can go to commonlawyer.com, and we've been in it for better almost 25 weeks now. We're going to do 45 weeks, Lord willing. Go to commonlawyer.com, go to the events button, and you can see there how to participate in our contracts of common law and talk about the fundamentals of it and examples of it. Back to you, John.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. Appreciate your time. Okay. We're going to go to the open forum. We're going to take the Q&A. If anybody's got any questions or comments, star 6 and 1 to get into the queue. We have some people in the queue, so we'll go forward with our first caller. It is an 812 number. What's your first name and your state?
Hey, John. Yeah, I thank you for taking my call. Actually, I called in a couple of weeks ago. I got actually a technical question more than anything else.
Give us your first name and your state.
I'm sorry. It's Joel, and I'm from Indiana.
Okay, Joel, go right ahead.
I filled out, I just became a premium member last week, and I talked to you a couple of weeks back about a situation that my daughter was involved in. She's a minor. I filled out, I'm hoping I filled it out correctly. I mean, I followed the directions, but because she was a minor, I did not know whether I could put her name on the show cause or the verified show cause of denial, et cetera. So I used my own name as the petitioner. I mean, is that something that I could do?
Well, you can. Well, you know, they're going to say you can't, but you can. Look, she's your responsibility. You're her father. She deserves a father as much as she deserves a mother. And no court, no people should take that away from an individual unless they're destructive to that child. No court, no people can or should be able to take that away from them. You know, when they keep a father or even a mother away from the child, then they're injuring that child. And this whole system, this CPS system, is the most evil system of all of our court systems. It's the worst. And because it destroys our children, it destroys our families, it destroys the fabric of America. But, you know, anytime I help people back, you know, helping them to write some papers, to file in the courts in these issues, you know, in these issues, look at the father could take up the represent their child. After all, they're responsible for that child. Now, that's an uphill battle, okay, and there's a lot of other positions that need to be made in a courtroom or in that court, shall I say, in order to, you know, solidify and to, you know, structure your position, give it a good foundation. They're still not going to want to hear it. They're still not going to listen. I know I've done a lot of paperwork for a lot of people helping them in these things, and you never get anywhere there. There's only one solution to deal with these courts, only one solution: challenge jurisdiction and get out of it. They don't have the jurisdiction. They can't give you due process. They have no power and authority over you, and you should be able to get out of it. You move it into federal. After you challenge jurisdiction, you move it into federal court. But look, if people have not educated themselves properly and they don't understand, you know, the what they're up against to begin with, okay, and all of the tricks that they play on the people, and they cannot, if you cannot take a court and put the other side or the court itself on the defensive and always maintain the offense, if you find yourself that you're always at the defense, you're losing and you can't accomplish your goal. You must be on the offense and constantly be putting them on the defense. They will get frustrated with you after a while, because they'll realize, well, we're on the defense trying to defend, and they're going to just try to shut you down, shut you up. You're just not going to go get anywhere with these courts. You cannot win inside these courtrooms, because they rule, they got the guns, they got the power, and they're going to rule them. The only thing you could do is get out of there. Okay, that's the only thing you could do. And so you have to file a paper, and we have all of these different forms that you can use. You can create your own. You can use ours as an idea. You know, you can file a paper to challenge the jurisdiction, but you got to understand what the court's going to do the moves they're going to make, and you got to be able to defend that. And if you don't have the experience to do that, you're going to lose. So that the only other option you have is to really join your case with ours, and then we will work through the process on these cases. You know, everything we deal with, when you move into a federal court, you don't deal with all the issues. You deal with the constitutional, assaults. When they violate your unalienable rights, that's what we deal with. Jurisdiction is challenged. Why? Because they don't have it. And if it's properly produced in a federal court, good likelihood they're going to go along with you because they don't want to get lost in all of that stuff. They do want to maintain the status quo, but they're not as quick as the lower courts to maintain the status quo with a blind eye. They just don't care. At least on the federal level, they're a little more cautious because they know there's a certain amount of risk there. But if they feel that you don't know what you're doing and you don't know the next step after, they'll beat you up in there just as bad as any other court will. So you got to be careful. It's a tough thing to do. You have to not only know how to challenge it, you have to know how to deal with the judge when he turns to you and tells you he's got it and makes a decision that he has jurisdiction, and then you got to be able to make the argument, well, wait a second here. How can you, it says here that jurisdiction must be decided. Did you decide already? I didn't see the other side. And if you decided, then you have to decide on what's before the court. And my paper is the only thing before the court. There is no other paper, so therefore you have to decide for me, okay? And that shows that you're biased. This thing has to be moved to another court, go up the line, and it's got to be a court of record. That's what we want. And of course, that's just part of the process, okay, that you have to make the battle. And then you got to move it along. And they're not going to move it into another court. So you got to move it into another court. You got to move it into the federal court for cause, okay? And then what a lot of people get lost on is they start arguing their case in the federal court. They just muddy up the waters. And when the judges look at that, they're not going to hear that case. Even though the constitutional violations are in there, it's so muddied up with the issues that they can't make decisions on. They're just going to throw it out. They're going to reject it, and you can't move it in. So you can only – you're not going to argue the case in a federal court. The only thing you're going to make the point is that this is a jurisdiction unknown to me. They have hijacked me into a jurisdiction unknown. It's not a court of record, okay? They have no power or authority over me, and they're unable to give me due process. They violate my right of due process. And therefore, you have to have a good wherefore clause, and therefore you want them to cease and desist and return you back to your original state of being when they started this assault upon you and your family. And that's a difficult thing to do because there's a lot of injuries, especially with children. There's psychological injuries. There may be some physical injuries. There's family injuries. There's injury from each individual, mom, dad. Everybody's injured in these courts. There is no trying to work things out. You got two, three, four, five, six lawyers trying to decide what a family is going to do. What kind of family is that going to make? What are you going to get with that? And they all they're doing is destroying. We don't want this child to see their father in this. And it's all about winning to them. They're not there with their hearts. Okay, it is a mess, and it needs to be changed. We need to get rid of family courts, and we got some ideas on what can go, but the people have to think this out. And we have to create another system that works better. And it's the people. We don't want lawyers in there. We want people who maybe have an education in counseling, people who are educated somewhat in psychology and sociology, and just even regular people, just fathers. And, we get a small group of people in the county that would help the family because family courts are supposed to be there not to destroy the family, but to mend the family, to assist the family, to help the family, to bring it back together if possible, or try to get it to where mom and dad can get along so that these children can come up, grow up somewhat healthy. And again, I have a lot of ideas on this, and we'll be writing some stuff on this a little later in time. Right now, it's not the time to be writing those things. We've got to be writing other things, but we'll get there. So anyway, if you got the ability to really do these things, then you can go to the website, our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. You can click on the due process tab there, And you can read that page through. It talks about all these court problems and everything. And then you click on the bottom. There's click here to enter the abusive due process. And you can either join your case with ours, or you can take these forms, instructions and forms on challenging jurisdictions, instructions and forms to move your case for cause, instructions and forms to file a habeas corpus, and how to move a court for enforcement, or even writing a notice and demand. You know, we have all of those forms. But you have to have knowledge and how things work, and you have to be prepared. You know, there's nothing more important than really having experience, you know. The School of Hard Knocks is the best school to go to. But you don't want to go to the School of Hard Knocks when you're trying to save your children, because you're going to fail. And you're going to fail and fail and fail. And failure is a good thing when you're trying to learn something, because you become stronger. You figure out what went wrong there. You know, I've been through all that in many, many different cases, so I've got the experience and the understanding on how these things work. I know what the next thing they're going to do, and I know how to react to them, and I know how to respond to them. Right. But if you don't feel confident in that, you need to do one of two things. You have to go out and get yourself a lawyer, and I don't know of any lawyer that's going to get you out of that court. That's not going to happen. That'll only try to help you in the court, but it's not the solution.
Right.
And there is no other solution out there other than maybe joining with us, and then we try to work your case with our case. At some point, we do believe we're going to be successful. It's an uphill battle, and I think we will hit success before the end of the year. I'm pretty confident of that, but of course, you know, it may be next year. But as long as we continue to be persistent about what we're doing, and remember, the evil people that are in charge that is destroying this whole system and destroying families and destroying our whole justice system, you know, those people are going to be removed. A lot of them, I think, are going to be removed by the processes that's going on in Washington with Trump and Barr and many others. So a lot of that's going to be taken away. The fear of the people and the fear of God, and the fear of God first, hopefully, but the fear of the people, the fear of God, and also the fear of Trump and the Attorney General will maybe straighten a lot of these people out, and they'll start responding properly and constitutionally. That, I have no doubt, is going to happen. And the big thing we really need is the people to take over the courts of law, because that's where it belongs. It belongs in the hands of the people. And these family courts, quote-unquote, I don't even think they should be called courts. Maybe they could be arbitration. You know, I don't know what you would call them. And even if they're called courts, that's fine. But the bottom line, you can't have a bunch of lawyers deciding what is going to go on in a family, because lawyers have one thing in mind, and that is to win at all costs, and they will pull every dirty trick in the book. They can't help themselves. There's very few lawyers out there that will act honorable, very few. But most of them are just greedy. They're in for the money. They've been taught the wrong way. And they're destructive, and they leave nothing but destruction in their wake. And right. I personally am sick and tired of it.
John, let me interrupt you here just for one moment. I've actually already filled out those forms and sent them in. Like I said, I became a premium member last week, and I filled out the forms. I've already sent them in, had them notarized and signed everything.
Let me tell you, if you don't have the experience in the courts, I hope you do, but if you don't, you better start boning up now. And we have a tremendous amount of information here just on this page alone to start boning up on. You need to start reading and understanding these things and get it. You know, you're taking our course, that's fine. That's going to be an education. You have a window of time, because these papers, you know, they got to go through a period of time. You got to give the other side 30 days. So you got 30 days to do things. You know, there's all kinds of, you can make appeals. Meanwhile, though, your children are being injured more and more, and so on.
If I make an appeal, aren't I putting myself underneath their jurisdiction, or her in this case?
I'm sorry.
Say
that again?
If I make an appeal, am I not putting her under their jurisdiction?
Well, you are, but you're doing what you can and have to do until you can get to another point. But you got to be careful. Yeah, an appeal does give them more authority, and it does change everything you've done before, because now you're giving them authority. So that is a problem. But, you know, you can always come back with something else. If you're trying to move things in a different direction and you need the time and you go through an appeal on that, an appeal on a decision, look, at you're going to their boss when you're appealing it. You're saying to them, I disagree with what you're saying, and I'm going to talk to your boss. And they could say, well, now you are agreeing. But you can say you had no choice. You were boxed in. You were between a rock and a hard place. You gave me no options. You're destroying my family. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to pull out every weapon I got to fight you. I'm going to go into the courts and try to get you into the federal courts and go after you for, you know, taking me into jurisdictions unknown. I'm also going to use your process and go to your boss. You're the boss. I'm going talking to you. Make them do the right thing. Are you evil too? You know? You can make your argument in this, and it is what it is, but the bottom line, at the end of the day, you know, the constitutional position will win once you can get it before a just court.
Another question I had, and I don't mean to take up all your time, which is on a related issue, is that I have emailed Jan, and I think James, is that what his name is?
James does the intake. Yeah, Jim or James.
Okay, Jim. And I've got conflicting information, I think. I think it was Jim that told me that because she was a minor, I could not attach her case to the amicus curiae. Is that correct, or is that not correct?
Not at all. No, he's an error on that, that's all. And he's learning, too, like the rest of us. We're all learning. But no, you can attach her name to it because
so
you're her father.
Right.
I mean, look at that lawyer. Her mother is not taking, hold on a minute. Her mother is not taking control of her. Some lawyer in a courtroom, a stranger who doesn't know her at all. And the only time he knows her is for the couple of minutes he comes into the courtroom, makes a case, and talks about things, and he's serving himself. He's making his money. He's working through the process. He's serving the status quo, and he goes home, and maybe a month later he comes back in, and another 5-10 minutes, but has no relationship with your daughter whatsoever, doesn't know anything about her or what her true desires might be or what her true needs are. And every child needs a father as much as the child needs a mother, and they don't care about that. So, yeah, you have every right to take control of your child and protect that child and bring them under your wing and to be the advocate for them, to represent them, and to tell everybody else to go to Hades. They're going to fight you tooth and nail, but you got to fight back then.
Okay. On the instruction sheet, like I said, I've already filled out the paperwork and sent it into them. And they've had it for 3 days now. I realize they have 30 days, but obviously I don't expect them to respond back to me. So at the end of that 30 days, that's when I follow the rest of the instructions and fill out the rest of the paperwork.
But again, you know, you from listening to you talking, I suspect you have little to no real you know, background experience in the courts other than being dragged and beaten up. That's the only experience it seems that you have. Do you have further experience than that?
I mean, I've been to court a couple of times, but that's you've got it essentially right.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to succeed against these people. You don't have the proper mindset. You're not going to be able to beat them. People can beat them if they have the proper mindset. You know, they have to have that mindset, and that takes time to get. You know, and reading and studying, and that's what you need to be doing now. But let's see what happens. If they don't respond properly, then let's see. You know, maybe you can move the case over to us, and we'll take it over, and give them an amicus curiae, which they'll ignore. But you know what? They may not ignore them anymore. You know, as the word of what we've done in the paper that we filed, you know, trickles down through the system, they may not. They may start to look at us from a different perspective.
Okay.
So,
well,
anyway,
I thank you for answering my question.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I think we got Jeff coming up next. Jeff, call next question. Go right ahead, Jeff. 850. What's that? Florida.
Yeah, John, I as I try to indicate, I don't think this phone's going to last. I have two phones on the call right now. This one has the least battery. You didn't want to list my five questions until I was on the call. Don't know why, but I'm
Go ahead. Bring your questions up and let's talk a little bit about them.
Well, I mean, I sent them all to you guys. I don't have them in front of me. I don't know really what's going on here.
Okay, why don't we do this? Next Monday when we go into taking questions that come through the mail, make sure you're here and I'll answer them, and then you can get into the queue if you want to further discuss them.
Okay, so everyone should hold off on their mailings for this effort until then.
I'm sorry, say that again?
So everyone should hold off on any mailings on this effort until then. This has to do with the mailings.
Oh, if it has to do with the mailings, get a hold of Jan tomorrow. He'll hunt me down, and we'll talk about it.
Well, no, you told me that you wanted to put it off until tonight.
Well, I didn't realize it was about the mailings. I'm trying to think of what the questions were. You know, I think I breezed through them earlier, but I don't know that I went through yours. I did send you an email or something on it because,
Yeah, you told me to communicate them tonight, which you decided not to communicate them. I sent them all to Jan. They're in the queue.
Well, we could do one of two things. We can do them right now, or we can do them first thing next Monday.
Well, please
and
do
if
them
it's
now.
Something, huh? If it's something that's going to hold off on the mailings, then maybe we should have a private conversation tomorrow.
Okay.
So you got three options.
John, I mean, clearly, it's up to you. It's up to you, but I...
John, I have the messages here. I summarize them, and it works out to about four questions. If you would
read
those questions.
Let's go through the four questions and see where we go with that, and then we can pick up for further discussions. Go ahead. We'll leave Jeff unmuted for now. Go ahead.
Okay, and if his phone goes away, I'll unmute the other one so that he stays in here.
Okay.
Jeff's in five messages. Why don't we individualize the heading so the receiver at least thinks it may relate to the court they are working in?
I don't understand that question. Which heading? Amicus Curiae does go and focus in on the heading of the court that we're going, that the problem exists in.
No, this has to do with the mailings we're doing right now. Every heading is for the Northern District of New York.
For each one of the federal district courts?
Well, it's not really, because we're addressing it to only the Northern District, not even all of New York.
Well, no, that's not true. No, look, we happen to be physically here in this area, and that's why we're doing it through this court. This is where we can operate from. I mean, we're not going to file it in California when we live in New York, and so the people who are really controlling this, you know, have to be close by. But no, we're suing the United States Supreme Court and the judiciary, the entire judiciary, which includes the appellate system and everything. We're suing the whole court system. And so we're addressing them only as the judiciary. If you look up into the heading, it says the judiciary, the United States Supreme Court and the judiciary. Let me see how I worded it. Hang on a second.
I don't have that at all. I have the Northern District of New York only.
That's where the court is being held. Okay, that's where the court case is. This is where they got to come to deal with us. But if you look at the heading where we lay out the defendants, okay, and remember, we've been in court for 2.5 years, all right?
Right.
We're going after it's the United States grand jury, status sovereign, the tribunal, the people, against the United States Supreme Court, federal judiciary, which, of course, includes the appellate process too, appellate system, the U.S. Senate, the U.S. House of Representatives. That's who we're suing. So it's the court system and the legislators. That's who we're going up after.
Well,
now,
so John, why are we sending these documents to so many other courts? I mean, they're not going to read them.
Well, if they don't read them, that's their loss, because maybe one day they'll go back and read them when they start to realize that something's up, okay? But look, we can't force them to do anything. You know, we can't force them to look at anything. We can't force them to read them. We can't force them to obey the law. But ultimately, we can. And this is the process we're using to do this by. And if you read through the paper very carefully, we're at the point of we're at the decision in order. The court, the trial is over. We've been in trial for 2.5 years. The trial is over.
I mean, everything in the trial, in my opinion, makes 100% sense. I'm only concerned, though, that...
Well, look, it's an impossibility for us to do it. We don't have the resources. I don't have the ability to check every single paper that goes out here to make sure it's done right on the form. It changes the whole thing also. I mean, you know, we now have to go and change each one of these. It just can't be done. It's too much. It's asking too much. But it is clear we are suing the judiciary. That's all 94 federal district courts. We've been talking to all 94 federal district courts. We've been talking directly to each one of those courts. We've talked directly to the United States Supreme Court. We've talked directly to the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House. And we even talked to the president, but he complied. He's the only one who complied. He's doing something about this process. He sees that there are enemies, foreign and domestic, destroying our nation, and he's doing something about it. So you'll notice his name has been removed from this process.
I have not seen his response, but I mean, okay. So that's all I was saying is that
what's the next question? You know, this is the way we're doing it. There's no other way we can go.
Okay.
It's just way too much,
okay.
You know.
Okay. Yeah. Well. Okay.
But we cover them all, and if they don't understand that we cover them all, well, that's their loss, isn't it? Because we're going to grow the list of indictments because they refuse. If they think, and this is how lawyers do think. Their name isn't in there. They think that they can continue to violate the law, to violate the people, to ignore the Constitution, to continue in bad behavior, that they think because their name isn't on it or their court isn't on it that they don't have to do that? Not at all. And you know who we're really talking to, really? We don't care what they think, do, or say. We want them to get the paper, and if they don't read it, that's their problem. There's lots of judges there, and I'm sure some of them will read them. And, of course, some of the district judges will read them anyway, on the chief,
right.
You know, the chief justices and so on and so forth. But we really don't care anything about what they think or what they say or how they respond. What we're looking for is the United States Supreme Court, those 9 individuals that are responsible for everything that's taken place in these courts today. They know that natural law courts have been concealed, shut down. They've sealed the doors. You cannot find them. They provide no paperwork to get into them. They press everything into equity, and they put on their capes, and they put on these veils, and they cover all the truth up, and then they tell you this is what you got, and then you'll always lose because the status quo will always win, and if you go back and check the records, it is always that way. Always.
Right.
Once in a while,
absolutely.
Someone wins. It's rare. Some judge got frightened because someone did something and understood what they were doing, and they got frightened, and that is a rare case. So we don't care. I don't care. We don't care. We shouldn't care. They need to do the right thing, or we need to indict them, because they're going to continue to get habeas corpuses. And every time they get habeas corpuses and they refuse to do the right thing, their name's going to go onto the list of indictments. And guess what? One day these indictments will be valid and will be prosecuted. I there's no doubt about it, because if justice is going to prevail in America, you know,
right.
With what Trump's doing, what's happening, if justice isn't going to prevail in our courts, what worth is it anyway? Anyway, it's irrelevant. We have America.
Yeah.
And it's up to the people. The people got to do this thing. We, the people, got to fix it. Anyway, what's the next question?
Well, before we go to the next question, I just want to point out, though, that Jan, this is not an attack on him, because I don't think he was in any better position than any of us, but he had told us all that we, the documents we're going to be sending were 50 pages.
Yeah, about 50,
It's 300.
No, it's 59. It's 59 pages.
Oh. So,
well, you don't have to send you do not have to send the memorandums. Again,
okay.
You know, they've got our money. they're spending our money to defend themselves and to become rich and do whatever the heck they want to do, okay?
Right.
And yet we're all poor slobs out here suffering just to survive, bringing our pennies together to try to do what we have to do, okay? They can go, look at, they can go and they can see the memorandums. They can get all of the, because if you want to put the whole case in it, it's eight or 9 inches high, okay? It's about 3 or 4 reams of paper is what it, the whole case, okay?
Yeah.
At least 4 or 5 reams, as a matter of fact. It's a lot more. But, you know, if they want those papers and read through them, and they should be interested in it, they just got to go up to, they're the courts. They can get into anything. You know, they got to go to Pacer, or they can get in Pacer from around, you know, the back door anyway. Or they can come to our website and download it all. They do whatever they want.
Okay.
You know?
If I had the Northern District, I would send them all the pages, but okay.
The Northern District has all the papers, and the new papers, they've got them now. They've got everything. They've got all 9 inches or so high of papers. They've got it all.
Okay. All right.
And United States Supreme Court has it all, and all the important people have it. The Attorney General Barr has it all. The President Trump has it all. Okay, those are the people that need to have it all. We didn't send it all to both houses. We sent only the 59 pages. And they need to go out and get them, the rest.
Okay.
And if they're too lazy and they don't want to do it, that's their loss. I don't care.
Right, okay. That was my misunderstanding. So thank you for clarifying.
What's next? And we've got to move along because we've got other people. Go ahead.
As our government is much more than a Republican form of government, indeed it is a unique Republican form of government, far superior and much further reaching than any other, why do we never state such in our documents?
Oh, we do. I write about it. We write it in our documents. We write it in all of our website. Look at the difference that makes, and maybe I should do something just focused. Maybe I should do a memorandum on that. I thought I did, matter of fact, but I'll have to go look. Maybe it needs to be structured better. But look at, here's the bottom line. A republic is a government that proceeds according to law, or at least that's what they claim they are, okay? Russia is a republic. China is a republic. There's lots of republics. We're a unique republic. What makes us different is a covenant with God, a republic by and for the people, under God,
yeah,
with his authority and his blessings and his liberty. And that's,
yeah,
one of our liberties. You see, when we made that covenant with God with the Declaration of Independence, and he gave us the blessings of his liberty to live under his law, the desire to live under his law. You know, you go back and you study the Old Testament, and you see what took place. A lot of foreign people, you know, came in with the Jews. They were happy to live under their law and their land because they would prosper under there. And a lot of them probably became better, godlier people than maybe a lot of the Jews. You know, all the Jews wasn't necessarily saved. It's always been a remnant, just like anything. It's those who really have the love of God in their heart. How do you love God? You love him by loving his word. When you love his word, you're loving God, and you're loving your neighbor. But in any event, the covenant is between we, the people, and God. And then we were blessed with liberty. And one of the liberties we are blessed with is the unalienable right to have government by consent. So we, the people, ordained and established under God's vesting us the power to ordain and establish this Constitution for them and those people in our government is underneath the Constitution, and that's the structure right there. That's the,
yep,
difference of our government than any other government. You know, the freedom,
yep,
formula was found by Thomas Jefferson. And if you look into this, I mean, he's the one that brought this whole structure together. And he's the one who went back into history to find, it's not that he invented it, he discovered it. So it goes back to Mosaic Law, 1600 B.C. Next question.
Am I incorrect in my memory that our classes teach that the Bill of Rights is not a enumeration of any right, but instead is a reiterated partial list of what the founders felt are the more important rights, and by itself, it does not extend any right?
Well, yeah. Look, at the Bill of Rights is just written for our own protection. It's a bill of prohibitions. They're forbidden to injure us in those areas. And of course, it extends much further than that. Okay, because let me read it. Let's see, 7, 8, 9. Hang on a second. Lost it. Let me read it. I think it's the. Was it the 10th Amendment? Yeah, the 10th Amendment. The power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor forbidden by it to the states or reserved to the states respectively or the people. But remember this one thing, and this is the key thing, okay? And this is where people have to really come to understand what liberty really is, and that is that we're not under any statutes. The government has no authority to write a statute to govern our behavior, okay? And it was, let's see, Samuel Adams who put it pretty good. He wrote, "The natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth." That's our government. We're free from them. And not to be under the will, this goes even further, the will or legislative authority of man. We are not under the legislation. If you go back into the Constitution, read Article 1, Section 8, you will discover the 18 powers that we've gave to Congress, and there's nowhere in there that we gave them the power or the authority to write law to control our behavior. The penal code in USC 18 has nothing to do with we the people. That has to do with territory. Has to do with the law of the sea, ultimately, okay? Has nothing to do with we the people. They cannot apply upon us. They do, and how do they get away with it? Because we're too ignorant to know. You know, keep the slaves ignorant. Keep them stupid. Don't let them get knowledge. Knowledge is power, you see? And that's what they've done. So, look, we're not under their legislative law. So if we're not under their legislative law, there is nothing they can do to injure us, they can't deny us our right to travel or anything, because in order to deny us our right to travel, they got to write all these codes and stuff and control our behavior, and they don't have the power or the authority to do that. The states don't have the power or the authority to do it either. The county, I don't know if any counties make law. I don't think they do anymore. I don't know. I don't think they make law at all, but they make some kind of rules and regulations or whatever. But any of the statutes up against the people would be, I think, on the state level only, and, of course, on the federal level. They have no authority. That's why you can challenge the jurisdiction. Anytime you walk into a courtroom and it operates under statutes, and especially if there's one guy sitting as a jurist, okay, you know automatically you're not in a court of law, you're in a court of equity. And a court of equity has no power or authority to run any court or justice of any kind, or call it a court of justice, to go after the behavior of the people on a criminal level. They just don't have that authority. Only the people have that authority. They have to have an indictment. They have to have a trial jury. And it has to be a free and independent, untainted jury with knowledge of nullification abilities. Okay, because there are times when, for instance, if there was a criminal case up against an individual working for the government, well, they're under a contract, and the trial jury has to take that into consideration, but they can nullify it, those statutes. They can reduce it or make it even more stricter, or whatever it is that they want to do. It's their authority and power, and their decision is final, cannot be overturned, period. Next question.
Does anyone feel that we will be better served if we proceed as if the receiving clerks are ignorant of the laws and of natural rights in general?
Read the first part of it again.
Does anyone feel that we will be better served if we proceed as if the receiving clerks are ignorant of the laws and of natural rights in general?
Well, we have to presume they have the knowledge of the job that they have. We know that they don't, but we have to presume they do. How do we know they don't? Because I can't believe that the clerks are the only ones working for government that when they raised their hand and said that they would protect and serve and uphold the Constitution, that they understood it. Because they're as ignorant as the judges, they're as ignorant as the lawyers, they're as ignorant as we the people, they're as ignorant as everyone else is. Except for those who have come to realize that it's time to get rid of our ignorance and start filling that void with something of value like the law. And so, but we have to assume, when you go into a court, let's say you're battling a court, two lawyers are battling a court, it's expected upon them to know the law. It's just expected upon them. So we're going to expect upon them, and we're going to let them know. We're going to treat them like dummies anyway. I know the papers that we filed, if you read our notice, our demand to file, what did we call that? let me see where it is here. To file on demand under penalty of law. If they read through that, we tell them, let me go through this very quickly. Please read carefully. You are directed to file the enclosed non-statutory document unimpeded as required by law. This is a non-statutory extraordinary action for an extraordinary remedy under the common law, and being non-statutory, no fee is required. The judge has not been given any adjudicated powers over the filing and is bound by law under Rules 60, Title 10, which provides for the duties of the clerk by which you are sworn and bound by oath under penalty of law to perform without exception, promulgated pursuant to Title 50, the United States Code, 1803, which shall govern all proceedings under said rule. The clerk is to delegate duties to the staff as the presiding judge may authorize. The clerk is to maintain the court's docket and record. The clerk is to accept papers for filing. The clerk is to keep all records in a secured location. And the clerk is to perform any and other duties consistent with the usual powers of a clerk of court as the presiding judge may authorize. And it goes on, immediately upon receiving the enclosed document, so on and so forth, they have to send us a copy. And I don't want to read through all this. It's in the paper. It's around page, it's on page 2, is the file on demand. Now, we did also file a special, another letter, a cover letter, but we only sent that one to the clerk. I will post that during the week and put it up maybe with the memorandums, a copy of that letter that we sent to the clerks, which is a little more, it's very, very specific, short, cut and dry. Next question.
Shouldn't we be clear with what we mean by please read carefully?
I can't say it any better than that. How clearer can you get? Please read carefully. You know, people haphazardly read. You know, I notice sometimes when I read, I miss a word. I put the wrong word in there. And I realize it later as I pass through it, and I try to correct it sometimes, or if I happen to be listening to an audio and I was speaking and I saw, whoa, I should have said, I meant the states, not the people, you know, or I meant the people, not the states. That happens. It's just mistaken. But look, we all read haphazardly, but when someone says, please read carefully, that means maybe we better read it 2 or 3 times and slowly and make sure we understand it. Because it has a repercussion, that's why we're saying. But I don't know how better to say it. Next question.
Okay, that was all the questions. All the other stuff was clarifications.
Okay, Jeff, you got 10 seconds, and then I got to move to the next caller. You got anything else to say?
No, I really don't. I think ideally this is something that you and I would talk about. I feel that all the points that I was trying to make somehow did not come through the way that I meant them. But, you know, I'm not trying to belabor this. I'm not trying to...
Oh, yeah, I understand.
I mean, I think that if you and I can talk directly, I think I can, make it more clear.
Well, look, we have meetings from time to time, and we invite anybody to come to those meetings, and I think we should do that with all meetings. We had a meeting earlier today before this program which I think should be held really in the Monday night room, and people want to come early to listen in, they should. We need to be open and transparent as possible on the one hand. And on the other hand, people coming in and listening, they may at the end of the day say, hey, I'd like to participate too. So maybe it'll spark something in a person. But we should be open. All of our thinking and doing should
be open. I would love to be invited. I would love to be invited.
All right. Well, I'm going to say at this point forward, we should have these meetings in our open forum room, this room here that we're speaking in, and Jen should just send out a message to everyone, let them know that this meeting is taking place. You're welcome to come in and sit and listen, and even to some degree participate. You know, sometimes we're on something that is structural, and we want to get through it quickly and get job done and move on to things. But at the end of it, people can pipe in some thoughts and ideas and maybe say, hey, I'd like to participate more directly and work to help this project along. So, but with
absolutely.
That, I got to move on to the next person.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
Thank
good
you.
Night.
Okay, let's go to the next call. It's a VoIP dialer. It looks like Dave, D-A-V. You got the mic.
Yeah, I got what? Where's that paper at? First of all, where's that paper at you were reading from earlier?
You can find it. You can find it on our front page. Okay, if you go to our front page on National Liberty Alliance, it's only a couple down. Let's see. You can also find it under Grand Jury Action Against the Judiciary. You'll find it there too. It's an extraordinary action. You have to scroll down a little bit to find it on that one. But it says decision and order and declaration to restore the law. And again, it's on our front page. It's just maybe a couple inches down. It's right in the center.
Okay, I got another question here.
But all of the attachments, the memorandums and all of the paperwork, where there's hundreds of papers here, that you can find under Grand Jury. And highlight Grand Jury and click on Action Against the Judiciary, you'll find everything. And anybody who really wants to understand law and understand what's going on, okay, not only take our course, you should read through all these papers. Now, there'll be a lot of redundancy, but when you're learning, redundancy is good. So read through these papers, and it's an education in itself. All right, one other question. We've got to move on because it's running out of time.
Okay, this is like two questions in one here. You keep on putting down equity courts. But equity is supposed to follow the common law, according to the way that I read equity.
Well, equity is supposed to follow common law from the standpoint in our country under the structure of American jurisprudence. Okay, and yes, you are right. We're under the common law. They're supposed to follow through those procedures. But bear in mind, you know, all these U.S. titles, and there's, again, there's 57 U.S. titles. All these U.S. titles have a purpose, okay, and they're directed towards someone particularly or groups particularly. Like, let's take U.S. Title VI, that's directed to Homeland Security. So the process and the procedures, the regulations, the way they operate, the codes and even statutes, if it's a positive law title, and half of the titles are positive law, the other half are just administrative. But if it's positive law, then it is law, and it has consequences when you break things. If you break the law, there's a consequence, and it may be then referred to USC 18, and maybe a certain amount of punishment would be required and applied to that. On the other hand, if it's administrative, it may be regulations, like the U.S. Post Office. They operate not under statutes but under regulations, and if they break those regulations, that's not positive law, by the way. It's just regulation.
You're calling statutes positive law.
Statutes and codes are usually common law. Regulations are usually administrative. Okay. Regulations is like policies and procedures from a corporation. And if you break the policies and procedures, you know, there might be a particular administrative punishment they may apply upon you. They may tell you take 2 weeks off without pay or something, whatever it is. Well, no difference in government. And they may even fire you, say, hey, you break very, you know, this, you should never have broken these regulations, these policies and procedures. You're out of here. Pick up your check on the door on the way out. You know, that's what it's all about. They're all lawful, okay? There are exceptions to certain ones, particularly USC 26, which is tax, okay? That's an exception, of course. Also one other that might be an exception, and I'm looking for it, is USC 34. Because USC 34, I was listening to Brent talk, and he was talking a little bit about prisons and stuff, and it got me wondering about that. And I didn't notice anywhere we gave authority to our legislators to to create prisons. The only thing that comes close to that I saw is in Article 1, Section 8, and we gave in Clause 6, we read to provide, legislators have the power and the authority, to provide for the punishment of counterfeiting the securities and current coin of the United States. Now, providing punishment, does that include a prison? Well, we go to Title 34, it talks about crime control and law enforcement. And in there, you'll find different things in here. You'll find the justice system. You'll find protection of children, other persons. You'll find law enforcement, criminal justice personnel. And you'll find prisons in here. And so is that constitutional? Personally, I don't think so. Providing punishment is one thing. If part of that punishment is going to a jail, and if the jury agrees with that, then it should be they should be going into a county jail, in my opinion. I don't think there should be such a thing as a state prison. I don't think there should be such a thing as a federal prison. And if we stop putting people into jail for stupid things, and I think 90% of the things, you know, some smoking pot or driving without a license or something like that, we shouldn't be putting people in jail for those things at all. And so 90% of the county jails would probably be emptied out. We'd have plenty of room for real criminals. And again, we're talking about violent people only. Who else would you want to put in jail? There's other things you can do. If you have to confine a person somehow because they may run or for whatever reason, you could put a ring on their leg and put them under house arrest and allow them to go to work the next day and, you know, whatever. And they get more and more liberty as they prove themselves, if that's what's necessary. I don't know. But you know what? The jury has to decide that. Okay? I'd like to look into that. I'm going to try to get a dialogue maybe with Brent to see what he knows about this. But I have little to no knowledge. But I personally feel I don't see anything in here that gives them power and authority to create a prison. But next question. Well, we got to move to the next caller, so something short.
Yeah. The states created the federal government.
The people created the federal government. We the people. And I know Judge Napolitano teaches that. That's a great defect in my opinion. It's a huge. Do you realize how much liberty we would lose, how much power and authority we would lose if we said we the states? Okay, just think about that. Because the states are above the federal government, okay? And that is true to a lot of degree, except for where they've given up certain liberties, where Brent covered a couple of them tonight under Article 1, Section 10. It's got to be we the people that ordained and established, okay? It is true these people that, hammered out our country were people involved, but remember, they were not elected at the time. They may have been elected to work with the Continental Congress, to hold certain positions, to do certain things, and also to some degree to have a temporary government coming along. But they considered themselves the people, and they spoke on behalf of the people, and they said to themselves and their posterity, and it must be we the people. After all, the covenant is between we the people and God, those willing to live under the United States and under those laws. And that's why when these people come in, like the squad, and they want to try to change laws and do different things, well, why come here? Go someplace, because you need to come in under what we have put together. Either you love what we have or you don't. You know, you go back to the original state, 1600 B.C., when the Jews, later on, the Jews come out. I think it was 1600 B.C. where Moses comes, and they come out of Egypt, and wander for 40 years and establish a place, and they have a great government for 400 years, and many people came from other areas or joined themselves to the Jews and were willing to live under their laws and their ways of life because it was pleasant. It was great. It was a place run ultimately by God, but it was the people rule. It was the people rule under God. That's what we have. So love it or leave it, you know. I agree with President Trump. But we got to move on because we only got a few. Well, actually, we're past time, but I'm going to take a couple more calls, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, let's go to our next caller. Jeff, we got you. Let's go to someone from Arizona, 928. Tamarari, I don't know how to pronounce. Tamara? 920, they're unmuted. 928-940 phone number from Arizona. Going once, Arizona. Going twice, 928, Arizona. Three times. We'll go to the next caller. Okay. Missouri, Williams, you got the mic, 913. 913, you got the mic. Let me see if that helps. 913. Okay. One more time. Missouri, 913-702 phone number. Okay, we're going to go to our last caller, Drew from Pennsylvania, 570. You got the mic.
Yeah, hi, John. This is Drew from Pennsylvania.
How you doing, Drew?
All right. I talked to you a couple of times about this TFA thing I'm dealing with the courts and all.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I went in there, she couldn't get me to comply more or less, so she put a 3-month continuance on it. I went back the second time without a lawyer, and, you know, she got pretty ticked off or whatever. But I did talk to a lawyer who said, oh, I can't be there, so get a brief continuance. And, oh, she's going at it. She marked with a big marker on the thing, last continuance. So, okay, so I go see him on Saturday, give him money, and then he tells me he can't be there for the hearing the next week on Thursday. And I'm like, oh, boy, that's not going to work. So then he goes and said, well, I'll try to talk to her, he said, on Tuesday. And he goes on Tuesday, he calls me and says, well, she's not going to give me an answer till tomorrow. I said, well, that probably means she's not going to do it. She called me the next day. Well, she wanted me to talk to the other side's lawyer, my wife's lawyer, you know, and see if she'll continue. The wife's lawyer said, well, if he signs divorce papers, I'll do the continuance. I said, I'm not signing nothing. So I said, I'll just go in by myself, so I'll prepare. So I went in, and she waited again till the end, keep me till the last one. And I go up, and she's going at it, saying about the lawyer talking and this and that, one of the continuance, and we already had continuances. And
Can you talk to your wife? Can you have conversation with her?
No, because there's a no-contact PFA. They're alienating me from my wife. I can't even talk to her.
That's wrong. Look at if you're going to represent yourself, you got to be able to talk with your wife. You know, they want you to talk with the lawyer. Do you think your wife would be willing to talk to you?
I don't know. I really don't know. Right now my wife is being emotionally controlled or mentally controlled by my ex. That's who's pulling the strings here. But
here's the problem. I mean, you know, we can't get too involved in this kind of a case, but, you know, there's lots of things you can do. And again, it gets back to experience. You're already seeing it. The judge is going to beat you up pretty bad unless you know how to deal with that judge.
Well, let me tell you what I did so far.
Huh?
Let me tell you what I did so far.
Well hold on. I don't want to get too involved, maybe because it's after 12 to begin with, but I did want to take the last caller. But let me just tell you if you can find a way to do this, okay? And I've counseled a few people to do this. One person particularly who tried to do it, and the wife just isn't willing to do it, so it just creates another problem. But here's the bottom line. You know, whatever is going through the divorce, the lawyers are going to suck up everything. Why have a lawyer? Let's come together and let's really be honest and let's do what's right, okay? And you got to put on paper what you think is right and offer that to the wife and get some dialogue going back and forth, maybe even getting an arbitrator to come in at some point to look at things and to agree, well, this is a little heavy-sided or, well, this is a good agreement, you know, or whatever, and see how you can move things along and then just go through filing the papers without any, you know, any arguments.
What I said was, I'll sign divorce papers if she does the counseling, because I need us to all get together to have counseling. This is the way I can talk to her. Right now, she's being manipulated, and she doesn't even know what's going on in her own head.
Well, then that's what she's got to work on, because I agree. That's a good idea.
That's what I'm working on. That's my goal. I'm not doing nothing until we get counseling. Now, here's the thing. The last hearing...
Have you told the judge that?
Yes, I did. And the last hearing...
What does the judge say?
The judge is ignorant. She's ignorant of the law even, but she just has a big ego. Last hearing, her lawyer came out in the hall.
You only have one option, okay? You only have one option, okay? And that is to file with the court that they don't have jurisdiction. Did they drag you into this, or did you start the process?
No. They went, and she filed for the custody of the kid. I haven't seen my granddaughter that I have 13 years. I haven't seen her in 4 months.
But they filed, you, the other side, your wife's side or whatever, filed.
Yes, she filed.
Okay.
Protection from abuse. But here's what I did. Her lawyer came out.
No, hold on a minute. There's only one option here. It doesn't matter what the stories are. You got to look for the way to get somehow a conclusion to this thing. There's only one option. There's only one option that I see. I can't see or think of another one. After suggesting certain things, there's only one option left, okay? And that is to go back to the first idea and write a really good, solid paper that's honest and really, truly fair, okay?
Right.
And put it onto the paper, okay? That's how it is. And then go in and challenge the jurisdiction of the court and then move it into federal court for cause because they don't have jurisdiction over you. You're not going to get due process, and you're in jurisdictions unknown.
Right.
And then that case shuts down, and then you press the issue to the wife for that. Look, let's try to just work this out. We don't need lawyers. Let's get it done, okay? And when we get it done, then all we got to do is file the stupid stuff with the state, which you really shouldn't have to do, but you got to do at least at this point in time, because you entered into a state. Controlled, they became a partnership in your marriage when you went to get a marriage license.
No. God, listen, the last hearing her lawyer comes out, she's talking to me in the hall about stuff that doesn't pertain to the PFA, and I'm filing a bar complaint on her for that. She made a housing discrimination claim to me I'm filing against. I told her I had challenged jurisdiction. She said, what's that? Right? That's what she said, what's that? So I got the continuance, and then this other hearing the other day, she goes running down the hall with divorce papers, unfolds them, gives me a pen. I said, are you not? I said, I'm not signing that. She said, well, it's after 90 days. She can get it without you. I said, no, she can't. She has to wait a year. So I said, you're talking to me without an attorney again. I said, I'm going to file a complaint against you now. So then we go up in front of the judge, right? And when we went up in front of the judge, she's talking about the continuance to lawyer, and her lawyer's over there yelling, oh, well, we have continuances. It says on this paper they had a mutual. I said, I didn't agree to that. The judge said, yes, you did. It was a mutual thing. I said, judge, you put that on me for 3 months because you couldn't pin anything on me, and you made me spend my whole summer under a temporary abuse protection. I said, and I have the transcripts to prove it. She said, how'd you get them? I said, I got my wage, right? She says, you can't get them without my signature because this is my court. I said, I filled out the form, and I paid money, and they took my money, and they gave me the transcripts.
Look, she just told you something, didn't she? She says, this is my court.
It's not her court. It's my court.
Well, that tells you, that's a psychology that tells you everything about the court you're in. You're not going to win.
Yeah, the divine way. And then the sheriff, four times the sheriff came over.
You're not listening. All these stories are irrelevant to the case. It doesn't matter, okay? You're not going to win on these stories and these arguments. You're going to win only
Why can't I file against a judge for abuse of process? She's on the record violating my rights.
To win, the only way you're going to win is to fight the law. Look at our Constitution protects our unalienable right of due process. You're
right.
Not getting due process in that court, number one. Our Constitution gives us a right of a common law court. okay? And if anybody that wants to go into a common law court, open a court of record, you could try that, but again, you're not going to get to it that way. You're not going to be able to win that case because you're going to have to make a state argument on a court of record, and you're still going to end up in federal court for cause. The only way you're going to win this case is to shut it down. And
Here's the only way to shut it down is to challenge the jurisdiction, federal court
for cause for denying of due process, and also not only just denying a due process, but hijacking you into jurisdictions unknown. You have no idea what jurisdiction. There is no jurisdiction name. There's no authority to this jurisdiction whatsoever. Okay,
right.
And so that's where your challenge is. You can win that in federal court, but you still have the problem with your wife, and
I understand that, but that is a religious liberty of mine, and I told the courts that. I put it on the record. I said, you're violating my religious rights. I'm trying to make every federal case out of this I can. I said, you're violating my federal rights.
Well,
because of my religious liberty to reconcile my marriage, you're keeping me from that. That's what I told them.
It doesn't matter. They don't care. Don't you understand? You're not going to win on any of those arguments.
But there's been cases that I looked up that won because of that.
You're not going to win in that court on those arguments. You're talking about people who know what they're doing to begin with and have a lot of experience in the court, and they know what the next move is.
They're ignorant. They're used to people coming in there.
Are you on the offense or the defense? Are you defending yourself or constantly, or are you on the offense and they're defending themselves?
Both. Actually, both. Yeah, because I'm trying to tell them they got to burn out proof and they can't prove anything. So,
but everything you've said, it doesn't sound like to me you're constantly on the offense because the judge is shooting down everything you do. They don't care. No more continuance. It doesn't matter. This is my court. Do you understand what she's saying?
Well, I wanted three times. I wanted three times. She gave me what I wanted three times. Now she's requesting to bring the child in to have an interview before at the next hearing, which is in September 18th now. But here's the thing. I want to file something against her, and I want to file something against the attorneys, and I'm sending the president and judge a letter and all this, letting them know what's going on with this abusive process in this court.
Okay,
I think she's violent. All right. Well, here's the thing. I looked up under their codes, their statutes, this jurisdiction that says if you have several minimal contacts with the court, they get personal jurisdiction over you. Is that true?
Well, say that again, if they what?
It said the way they get personal jurisdiction over you or territorial, but they says they basically always have subject matter. But it says if you have several minimal contacts with that court, they get personal jurisdiction.
No,
is that
they
true?
Don't have personam jurisdiction. You can challenge jurisdiction of a court at any time. Let me make this clear. Okay, listen. If you went to court and you lost in the court, they drag you into court, you lost in court, and they put you in jail, and you serve 3 years in jail, and then you come out of jail, and then at some point you realize that court never had jurisdiction over me, you have every right, and it's an unalienable right to go back into the court to challenge that jurisdiction. Everything has to be turned back upside down and undone, okay?
Right.
And
is that a court claim?
That gets done has a lot to do with your wherefore clause or what your expectations is in that case, okay?
Right.
So jurisdiction could be challenged at any time when you discover, because the whole thing is deceptive, the whole thing is fraud, and until you unfold and uncover that fraud, you don't know it's fraud. People go to these courts, they have no clue. It's all fraud. It's nothing but fraud. It's about money. It's a cash
machine. It's fraud. Because she's violating her own rules. She's telling me laws that aren't true. And then she went and helped the other party because the other party said, well, he made a phone call to the mother-in-law and the friend. And she said, well, did you go to the police? They said, yeah, they won't do nothing. I said, yeah, because I didn't do anything.
You get into details of an argument that's not going to win or lose your case.
But she's telling them to go to the DA now. She's telling them to go to the DA, and she gave my wife advice to come take the house because she could evict me on a protection order. She don't live here no more. I told her, Your Honor, your code says that part of that code was there to keep people apart. She's already left. She's abandoned ship. She got another thing.
Did she recuse herself?
No, but I was going to. That was the next thing, that and the jurisdiction.
Well, maybe
yeah,
go that route. Say, look, you got to recuse yourself. One of the things, why do you have to recuse? Well, first of all, Your Honor, you said this is my court. How do you
right,
get
exactly.
my court? That's number one. I mean, that's pretty drastic. Think about that.
That's John, correct. I told her they're not the divine right. She's a servant, and I'm the people. That's what I told them. And then the sheriff came over and told me, this is the fourth time I'm going to tell you to shut up. And then he told me. Now, he's intimidating me under duress. He's intimidating me under duress when I'm trying to present my defense.
All right, Drew, look at it. It's 15 minutes after midnight. We've been on the line here for 15 minutes now.
Okay.
And I'll go back. I'm going to tell you the same thing I told you already two or three times. You're not going to win that case. The only way you're going to win this case that I can see, okay, and you're going to need some experience to do it, and that is to bring this into, first of all, you got to challenge the jurisdiction of that court. You got to make it clear that jurisdiction must be decided. You're going to go back into that court. She's going to tell you, well, I got jurisdiction, and then you're going to say, well, I don't understand. How do you have jurisdiction? Well, I decided I have jurisdiction. But no, then you go back and say, well, Your Honor, you just proven the fact that you're biased. Number one, you constantly think that this is your court. You already believe you have jurisdiction. I'm challenging jurisdiction, and jurisdiction must be decided. And on top of that, the fact that I am the only one that has a paper before the court making this argument, and there is not an opposite side making an argument against that, then that means they've already acquiesced to my position, and you have only one choice but to rule the fact that this court must be shut down because you don't have jurisdiction.
Okay. John, who could help me with that? Do you have a paper online? Do you have a paper I can look up?
Yeah, I already told them. Yeah, go up to nationallibertyalliance.org and then click on, hang on a second, let me get up there myself.
I did look for it the other day and I couldn't find it.
Okay, you go to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on due process.
Yes.
Okay, read through that page very carefully and slowly, okay? At the bottom of the page, you'll have an access, you get access to the information. Just click here to enter. Now, you're not going to get into that page unless you're a premium member. A premium member is someone that supports us with $5 a month or more. This is the only private page we have. So $5 a month or more. If a person can't afford that $5 a month or more because they're on a limited income, Social Security or something, and they can barely survive, well, then we'll give them free access, okay?
No. I'm a contributor. I would like to contribute more than that. I have before and a lot of things.
You click on that. And you come into there, and we have all the forms to do all the things I'm talking to you about it.
Yeah.
And do what you can do. But I tell you, you know, while you're doing this stuff, you'll have time because things take time. You know, there's 30 days here, another 30 days there, another 30 days there. You know, before you know it, you can have 90 or maybe 120 days. Well, you need to be making use of that 90 and 120 days, taking the course and reading papers and learning. We have a book on here that's a free book that you can take and download. And it,
John, I've been involved with you guys for like 10 years. I met you at Wilkes-Barre at Norm's Pizza, and you signed me up for a court administrator back in whenever at Norm's with Doreen and them. But I never went through the course. I started it, but I had problems with the browser and stuff, so I never followed through with it.
Right.
But,
well, now is the time to educate yourself while you're fighting this battle because you have to know their next step. You see, when you do this and you start working the process and they come back at you with something, you can come to the next Monday night meeting and say, hey, this is what they came back with me to, and we can give you some more thoughts and advice and ideas, and then you can move from there and take the next step.
10 days till a custody hearing, and I got a month until the next hearing. But I want to be prepared more for that, you know, because I might not even use the lawyer for that. I might actually recuse him at the lawyer. I'm just taking him for backup, really. But, you know, but, yeah, I definitely need to get this paper done and in there, and I am filing other things on them anyway because me and a friend are starting a website because there's people going through this process we're watching. They don't have lawyers. The public defender won't give them lawyers, and they don't have the money for a lawyer, most of the people go without a lawyer. We're going to start a thing where we're going to start teaching people. It's going to be like a workshop for teaching people some things about the courts and the law or how they're getting ripped off.
Let me explain something, okay? When you get into these courts, especially with custody battles, unless you really understand how to get out of it, you're not getting out of it. You'll be there until that child is like 18 or even 21 years old.
I agree with you, John.
They will have you and suck you in this case as much as they can because they're making money off this whole process. Okay?
I agree with you, John. I agree with you, but I already had three lawyers, one lawyer on federal charges. I got another lawyer who was fired by his firm, and another lawyer, you know, what he's done, he's just bored. But so I had asked him, I said, listen, let's just sit down and do this nicely. But they never want to do nothing nicely. They want to oppress you and they want to beat you up.
Lawyers only want their money. It's rare to meet a good lawyer.
It wasn't my lawyers, it was the other side's lawyers. I took him to the magistrate. Well, he took me to the magistrate, and I got a charge from the magistrate on him, and then he got fired by the law firm. The other lawyer went and held a 10-day notice for a default judgment, held it over a holiday weekend, and is stupid enough to sign his name and put a date on it when it was postmarked. I took him to the thing, to the judge, and to file a federal mail tampering charges on him. And then he got in trouble with the courts and stuff. But, you know, I told him, I said, don't mess with me. I said, because I'm going to come back at you. And he did. And now 3 years, he won't even make a move on nothing, because 3 years he's been sitting at nothing because he knows.
Well,
you know?
Most lawyers are bar lawyers, and they've been trained well in the art of BS. And,
exactly.
You know, it's all about money. You know, I talk with lawyers, and I remember one time when I hired a lawyer, and I was very specific what I wanted, and I'm listening to him. He's on the phone with other people and this and that. They're shysters. It's all about money. Money, 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 money. There's no heart here. There's no love for the work other than love for the money. Okay?
Hey, John, I got a question.
Once in a while, you meet a lawyer that has a heart and is really trying to do the right thing, but they are so rare.
They're puppets of the court. And the court, the problem with the courts is their egos are so big. They're up there flinging their hair and rolling their eyeballs. And they're used to everybody coming and submitting that they don't even know their own laws. The judge is telling her something that's not even what their statute says. She
they
did it three
it
times.
They go. I told
she
you, you're in jurisdictions unknown. They make it all up as they go.
Listen.
They apply the statutes they like. They ignore the statutes they don't like.
Listen,
and
lawyers obviously have lawyers have money, you said, so why don't you start a course to teach the lawyers what the common law is? Then you'll, in effect, help the people out in the courts because now the lawyers.
Never teach a bar lawyer, especially, I have no credentials. I never went to college. I did get a GED, and I did go to college for a year or two, and I was bored to tears, and I'm self-educated in everything I do, and including the law. It was a necessity for me to learn the law for what I was doing in my battle here with liberty, and it became a necessity. So I learned law, and I learned particularly constitutional law. I learned the Constitution. I learned about common law, natural law.
Where do we find a common law lawyer?
Well,
This is what I mean. Why don't we have a common law lawyer in all these counties?
I'm trying to tell you, listen, okay, you're not going to educate lawyers to be common law lawyers. That's not going to happen. First of all, who am I, they'll say, to try to teach them? They got a degree and, so on and so forth. That's number one. Number two, you have to undo everything they know, okay, because it's all programmatic, number two. Number three, common law is not about making lawyers rich. They're not going to part with their money.
But it would help to send the people. That's what I'm saying.
Huh?
It would help to send the people.
We just have to restore the courts. That's what we're doing first and foremost. And then people need to learn the law and represent themselves. And
that's
if you can't represent themselves, then you'll have to get a lawyer. But then once you have the common law process open and they understand this is a court of law, that's a court of equity. In a court of equity, you can act this way and do that. In a court of law, this is how this works, okay? It doesn't work with statutes and all these loopholes and all this crap. No, you're only there to find the truth.
Thought the equity and the law were both common law.
Huh?
I thought a court of law and a court of equity was both common law.
They're both common law, but people don't belong in courts of equity unless they're battling contracts and they feel that the court's going to be just.
Right. That's what confuses my case.
My career was in contracting, okay? Yeah. And I would much prefer going into a court of equity and just get through in one day, maybe 2 days, get it done get a decision and move on. Unfortunately, a lot of the people that I went up against, they were connected one way or another in the community, and they were protected by the judge. Okay.
Sure.
one case where the guy wasn't and the judge kicked his ass, you know. Matter of fact, he was so pissed off in the room, he said, everybody in the back room. So I went in the back room. The lawyer on the other side went in the back room. And the judge came in with the papers, a stack of papers, and he threw it at this guy across the table. He says, and there was some guy, an arbitrator, a clerk or someone, I don't know, whatever he was. He says, you sit here with him and you don't come back into my courtroom till you make a decision. He didn't say anything to me. He was talking to that lawyer.
Wow.
And they came and we made it, and the arbitrator in there, we came to an agreement. I was satisfied with it, went into the courtroom, and he said, okay, slapped his hammer, done. Okay, I got my check and I left. I mean, I didn't get it that day, but, you know, I got
well,
it later
on. Well, let me ask you something. Can I bill them for this, for a civil action with the PFA? Can I bill them for when I go in there?
I don't think so.
No?
You know, I have to do that myself, but no, I don't
Another question is, when I go in here, can they stop me from getting those transcripts from my hearing?
No, they shouldn't be able to.
I didn't think they could. I was going to file some things in Freedom of Information, the Freedom of Information Act.
That's the game they're playing with you. It's all about for time, and maybe you won't pursue it, and maybe when you do pursue it, it'll take so long and it'll be irrelevant because everything will be over. I don't know what's in their minds, and I really don't care. I'm telling you, you got to get out of that court.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to work on that. Thanks, Sean. Thanks for taking the time. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Okay. Again, do what you got to do. You can come back for more questions when you do the next stage, and we'll try to help you along. But you gotta study and be prepared. You know, got to get out of there. Okay, all right. We're going to end it now. Thanks everyone for coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. We are going to pick up on part 3 of this paper. You've got a copy. You can read it yourself. We're going to read it together. It's the decision in order, the final part of the paperwork that we've sent in. And everybody needs to get educated. That's the key. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Good night.